Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18th floor and above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. And we're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6. All coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're going to be hopefully talking to Kevin Powell. We're going to have him at the top of the show, but he was at Wrigley. And, of course, we all know that the game ended not even an hour ago. So he's there, and he's probably doing interviews and all that stuff. But we're going to get him on, right, Dan?
That is the plan, yes.
That's the plan. Kevin Powell will join us. He covers Chicago baseball and sports for us. He anchors the sports on the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis afternoons every day. You can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720, and we'll get him in here to get his feeling about tonight's wild card game. He is at Wrigley right now, and so he can tell us what it was like to be in the stadium when what happened. A little bit later on, I have 10 fantastic facts about Wilford Brimley, and that's going to lead us into conversations about the greatest character actors of all time. And then we got some pizza news to talk about as well. So there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You hear me, Wild Card Wednesday? And that's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. That's also for talk or text, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/NickDShow. And subscribe to our podcast. It's free. You can go to iTunes and subscribe. And every second of each show here is podcast, and they will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. Yes, at your leisure, bro. All right, let me say hello to Dan Shugrue. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
I'm all right, man. How about yourself?
Well, as a Cub fan, I'm not happy.
Mm-hmm.
That was very disappointing.
Yeah.
And it's really not fun to watch two different teams celebrate on the field at Wrigley two games in a row. That's not pleasing. I had my screening of Phantasm last night, so... So I only got to see 4.5 innings of the game.
of the regularly scheduled 9 innings.
Right. No, I saw the first 2 innings.
Right.
And then Phantasm ended. It was still 1-0 when I started my post-movie talk. And then, like, about 3 or 4 minutes into my post-movie talk, someone raised their hand and said Cubs tied it. So we were all very happy. And then... finished the post movie talk right around it was the bottom of the ninth, and we were all gathered outside. This was at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly MovieCo, and we all came out of the theater after Phantasm, and there were like 25 of us gathered around the bar. They have a bar on the second floor of the MovieCo or the Rosemont AMC theater, and we watched just the ninth inning, and then you came to pick me up, and we listened to the game on the way in, and then I watched the rest of the game here in the studio. Massively disappointing. Taking swings at pitches that shouldn't be swung at. I don't know. Gore, what are you doing? Just stand there, you know? You know, and you can walk, and then you can steal second. That's what the idea was. So lots of things did not fall into place for the Cubs. They had a spotty season anyway. It was, you know, it was questionable whether or not they were going to make it to the World Series, or indeed even win it, you know, or even make it. So that was questionable throughout. So I think, what do you think? What do you think, Dan? Are there going to be some big moves made? You think? You think Chile's going to be gone?
I would imagine Chile's gone.
Yeah.
I would. You know, I don't think they'd go as far as Madden yet.
Yeah.
I think there's just been, you know, because, you know, glass half full, you lose your number one pitcher. In all essence, you lose your number five pitcher, your closer, your secondary closer, and your MVP for good chunks of the season, and you still managed to win 94 games.
Exactly.
So that if you look at it half full, that that is a pretty good managerial job.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, there's a lot of question marks. And
it is. It is. I mean, and to say, I'm a Madden fan. I mm-hmm. know that there are people who are very critical of him, and sometimes he makes moves that you're like, what? But this is the fourth postseason in a row that the Cubs have seen. Now, granted, it was a very short. It was only one game. It was a very, very short postseason.
Right.
But it's the fourth postseason in a row that the Cubs have made, and this is under Madden. And that's great. And they've won one World Series and two division titles. And so, you know, that's great. And that's very unusual for the Cubs. Consistently making it to the postseason is not what the Cubs have historically done.
Right.
Ever, you know? And, you know, if things sort of change a little bit, they're still going to remain contenders next
right.
year.
Right.
That's not something we're used to as Cubs fans. At least I'm not used
right.
to. Right. I'm not used to it in April thinking these guys are going to make the postseason. That's just something that that never, you know, occurs to a Cub
sure.
fan. And to do that and to have them hit the postseason four seasons in a row. Yeah. Now, was tonight last night disappointing? Well, tonight, actually, technically today. Was it disappointing? Absolutely. Am I upset about it? Yes. But again, you know, you do the glass half full. But I will say this. I have no conflict for Thursday night for the Hawks.
Hey.
That's, you know, you want to talk about looking
at... Silver lining, yeah.
Silver lining. I don't have to flip back and forth. I can watch the first regular season Hawks game on Thursday night. You can listen to it right here on WGN. Pre-game is at 6. Puck drop at 6:30. We'll talk a little Blackhawks when we get Kevin
sure.
on the line as well. So, disappointing. Disappointing for the Cub fans out there tonight. And in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
How are you?
Doing well, sir.
So at this point now, do you root for the Brewers?
No.
Do you have to?
No. I'm not okay. that. I'm not like that. No. You know, I will say this, though. She's been great. After the initial celebration, she has not rubbed it in. And
yeah.
even her brother has laid off on the rubbing in.
It tonight hurt. You know what I mean? Like yeah. last night's game really hurt, and I think you know to mock us right now is it would be low. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
You know
they didn't
I mean?
Take it that low.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And I didn't want to leave. I was almost late because I was watching the game in my apartment, and I didn't want to leave my apartment to walk here. You know, because I thought
in case something happened.
And that's exactly yeah. what happened. And
oh
only,
yeah,
it's
that?
All I have to do is walk across the park, and by the time I walked in, Patty Vasquez was yelling about you know the loss. So
yeah, well. Yeah, I mean, you know, like I had my screening last night of Phantasm, and but we had a really big crowd. I thought we would have a lot less people because of the Cub game. You know what I mean? But we had a really big crowd, and I was really thrilled.
Were the cell phones lighting up?
Right as soon as I know at the end of the movie because it's a short film. It was only 90 minutes long. It's a short movie, and so but as soon as the end credits came up, the phones lit up. And then before I even started, like, because after the movie, as you know, you've been to several of my film club events.
Yeah.
Afterwards, I always lead a discussion and talk about the movie and stuff. It's the first thing I said when the mic turned on and I got in front of the screen in front of everybody was, what's the score?
Yeah.
And they said it's still 1-0. And so we didn't miss anything. Technically, we didn't miss anything.
I know. I thought of you and your movie screening. Yeah.
We saw the first two innings, so we saw the only run that was scored. And then when I started my talk... It was 1-0, so I was like, whoa, we didn't miss anything. We saw a really classic, great horror movie. It had a lot of fun, and we didn't miss anything. And they tied it while I was talking. So, but anyway, yeah, very disappointing. The Cub season is over, but, you know, you look forward to next season. I'm just going to look forward to next season, get it together, maybe make it a little bit further next season. I think Chile will be not part of this, not part of next season. I would imagine that announcement's going to come very... Very soon, that would just be my guess. But yeah, there were great highlights. You know that I still think that the Bodie game is one of the best things ever, and that was part of the season. There were a lot of great things that happened during the season.
In theory, we could have two MVP player caliber players playing next to each other.
Yeah.
On the left side of the infield.
Yeah, it's true. Baez had a hell of a year. Didn't have a hell of a postseason. He hasn't really had a hell of a postseason since 2016 when he won the MVP.
Right. But they would not have been where they were without
no
him.
No question about it.
They
no question
they,
about it.
They would have not anywhere near.
No, he was at, there was a long stretch of this season where he was the most exciting player in the majors to watch.
Right.
Not just on our team, not just in the National League.
Right.
In the majors, he was the most electric and exciting player to watch. And there was a long stretch of the season where that was the case. And he put up great numbers.
Right.
So, you know, Lester had a really strong year. He pitched well last night, you know. Anyway, it's just, it's sad. It's always sad, you know, when the Cubs season ends in any regard. But what's the most disappointing, like, Cubs season, do you think? Dan, which one? I guess everybody would say 2003. Would that be the?
Yeah.
1984 was bad for me. I have to say that was, I think 84, maybe 84 tops it for me.
I not being around for 84.
Yeah.
And things, you know, that you know, with 03, we had another chance, you know, the Bartman didn't end it.
No.
You know?
And it wasn't Bartman's fault.
It wasn't Bartman's fault.
The wheels fell off that cart earlier than that with that incident.
Right. And there was still another game that was played.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the 84 kind of, just from what I know, or 84 or 69 strikes me as a little bit more.
Yeah.
Just,
I mean, I was only four in 69. I don't remember. I mean, obviously I don't have a memory. Like, you don't have a memory. You were like three when they in 84. I was 19 and had just moved away from Wrigley Field. It was like a year after we moved away from, like, this is happening now. I don't live here anymore. I was working at the Jewels, and I had my buddy Roberto lived in an apartment building on Sheffield. So we would go up on the roof and watch the games from there. That was back when, you know, they weren't sponsored, and it was just some of the people who lived in the building would go up. There'd be a cooler and a Weber on top of the grill and some folding chairs. You know what I mean? Some lawn chairs. That's what it was. That's what the real rooftop was like back when I was younger. I would say 84, maybe number one. I have to say this, though. 2008 was a big one for me, because that, until 2000, probably 15, in my opinion, 2008 in my remembering lifetime was the best team that they fielded. I mean, 2008 was a great team, and then they get swept, and then they do, that's 2 years in a row they get swept in the first round of the playoffs. 2008, I was mad. I was really mad at the end of that season. So, but all right, we'll look on the bright side. I don't know who I'm rooting for now. I don't know. I'm a National League guy, but I don't really want to root for anybody in the National League at this point. I may root for the Red Sox because of my friend Bill. You know what I mean? Like they don't have enough championships. Like, Boston in every sport doesn't have enough championships at this point. So no, I don't want the Red Sox to win. Yeah, I guess maybe Milwaukee. You know, I don't know. They're our neighbors. They make cheese. So, all right. Hey, well, we're going to find out what's going on with Kevin. Again, he's working right now. You know, the game ended after midnight.
Yeah, so he's still in the locker room. So,
oh, he's still in the locker room.
He's still in the locker room now.
Okay. All right. Boy, that must be a fun locker room to be in. Because the locker room on the other side is, you know, popping champagne and wearing T-shirts and stuff. So, wearing new T-shirts and hats. All right. Okay, well, Kevin Powell is going to join us at some point. We don't know where. He's you know, it's a busy night for him sports-wise, and we'll have a lot to talk about with Kevin. And we will talk about all the sports and his Powell at the Park podcast and blog posts as well. We're going to talk about character actors, and we're going to talk about, we get some pizza stories to talk about as well. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'll take a break when we come back. If you guys want to jump in here, and we can talk maybe a little Cubs baseball, if you have any thoughts on it, you know, you can jump in. If you want to talk about maybe what season, I mean, obviously we all know what season was the best, and that would be 2016 in this lifetime, obviously. But what was the most disappointing, and how disappointed are you by this current season? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here on WGN. Let's break. Yeah. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Hey, we're going to start Wild Card Wednesday in a little bit. If you want to make a request, Wild Card Wednesday. You mean Wild Card Wednesday? That is any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later for Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here. How's everybody doing? It's live. We are in the Allstate Skyline Studios. 303 Wacker, 18th floor, having a good morning here. Disappointed by last night's Cub game and the outcome, late, just early this morning. Wrapped up a little over an hour ago. And we've been talking Cubs, talking about the Cubs. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Since I mentioned the Phantasm screening, I do want to thank everybody for coming out last night, because I really thought, because of the wild card situation, we were going to have a lot of people canceled and a lot of people not showing up, and we were going to have a small crowd. But we had a nice big crowd, and there were a lot of people who'd never seen Phantasm before. And a lot of my Phantasm brethren who came out with their Phantasm shirts. I'm wearing my Phantasm t-shirt right now, and my hat that used to be a Jägermeister hat, but since I quit drinking Jägermeister, there's a patch that's been sewn on of the scary silver sphere from Phantasm.
Oh, very nice.
So I transformed it into a Phantasm, or I should say my mom. She sewed the patch on. It's now a Phantasm hat. So I was wearing a Phantasm hat and a Phantasm t-shirt. And there were I was not the only one. There were some people out there who had some really, there's Phantasm fans out there. We're a weird breed, man, because it's a weird movie. It's a very weird movie. Esmeralda was there. Esmeralda Leon was there with V. And she had never seen it. Neither had he. He had never seen Phantasm. And they both loved it. I was like, I was really surprised at how much Esmeralda liked it, because Esmeralda, you know, horror movies really aren't her bag. And it's a, and Phantasm's a really weird movie. It logically doesn't make a lot of sense. Like I've said before many times, and the main character in the movie is a 14-year-old boy, and so I saw it when I was 14, and I just flipped over it, and it plays like a fever dream that a 14-year-old boy would have. So there are big sections of the movie that kind of don't make sense, and it jumps around from realism to surrealism, you know, in a moment. But it all works. I mean, it's an established tone that works. And so it was great. And, you know, the people that didn't see it before had a lot of really kind things to say about it. They were very, you know, impressed with it. Visually, you know, like the print that we had was the 4K restoration version that J.J. Abrams oversaw, and it looked magnificent and it sounded great. And my parents, who had not seen it in many years, saw it. They've seen it multiple times too, because, you know, I lived with them when the movie came out. They were reminded how much they loved the movie, and it was just a good night all the way around, and a really, 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 really good crowd. And yeah,
I know that this is a question you ask everybody on every film club. How many people had seen it, and how many people had not seen it before?
Most of the people had seen it, but we had a good chunk of people who had never seen it before. And when I asked, you know, who had never seen it, and I warned a lot of people. I was like, you know, because a lot of them were regulars. A lot of the people who had never seen this are regulars who come out every month, and I really appreciate that. That's one of the nicest things, you know, about doing this film club, is that people show up every month regardless of what the movie is. And that always makes me feel good. And you know, the people that showed up are not necessarily big horror film fans and certainly wouldn't see a movie as weird as Phantasm, but they were open-minded about it. And everybody who I talked to afterwards, even people who were unlikely, you know, to like the film, enjoyed it. So, yeah, it was a really good night to see that movie. And that movie means so much to me. And I blathered on afterwards, you know, behind-the-scenes stories. Speaking of behind-the-scenes stories about Phantasm, Friday morning, the writer and director of Phantasm is going to be on our show, because he's written a new book about making Phantasm and making all of his movies, about independent filmmaking in general, and it's called True Indie. And it's a really terrific book with great stories about the making of Don Coscarelli's movies, and really great stories that involve what it's like to be an independent filmmaker, and advice to people out there who would love to make, you know, independent movies, and what's the best course of action to do it. He shares his stories and the mistakes that he made and the great things that happened to him. It's a terrific book, and he's going to be on. Don Coscarelli, our good friend Don Coscarelli, director of Phantasm, will be on Friday morning to talk about that. Also, a little plug for tomorrow. Tomorrow night, Sven Gulli is going to be on. It's our good friend Rich Coase, Sven Gulli. October is always a very, very busy month for Rich. Sven Gulli makes a lot of appearances in October, because obviously October is Halloween time, and we're going to give you the whole schedule of places where you can meet Sven and get your picture with him and an autograph and all kinds of cool stuff. Very busy time of year, and we always talk to Sven Gulli right around there. So he'll be with us tomorrow. Don Coscarelli with us Friday. And again, thanks to everybody who came out to see Phantasm last night. Bigger crowd than I had even expected, and we had a great time. And again, here's the next 2 months. Let me tell you really quickly. The next 2 months that we have, in November, we're doing our tribute to Burt Reynolds. because Burt just passed away, and we are showing The Longest Yard, one of Burt Reynolds' best movies, one of the quintessential Burt Reynolds movies, one of the biggest crowd pleasers he ever made, and it's the original Longest Yard, remastered in 4K. That's November. And in December, we're going to show Scrooged with Bill Murray, and there's some a special announcement's going to be made a little bit later on when we get everything. It's going to be kind of a special. There's going to be a kind of a special deal for Christmas for December in association with our Scrooged screening. Now in November, we are going to do it the second Tuesday in November because of Election Day and Election Night and stuff like that. So we're going to do it on November 13th. So the next screening is November 13th. At the AMC Rosemont 18. Tickets are going to go on sale very soon. $10 to get in. Parking is free. Our tribute to Burt Reynolds, the original Longest Yard. So I hope you guys can make it out. We got a few texts here about the Cubs, and I'll get those in a couple of minutes. And we're going to take a break for the news, and then we'll get to those texts and more stuff coming up right here on 720 WGN. And I think it'll probably won't be till after 2, when Kevin joins us, because he's still in the locker room, he's getting audio, and he's got to put all that stuff together and file reports and stuff. So it's going to be still a little while before we get Kevin here, but we'll get him on to talk sports in general and Cubs from last night. All right, the news is coming up next. That's our first Wild Card Wednesday request, and it's Wild Card Wednesday. Yippee, Wild Card Wednesday! Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. That was from Trucker Rich, who chose Chelsea Dagger, of course. On to hockey season, he says. He also notes a parallel between the two teams went from not expecting to win to expecting playoffs every year. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah, well, the Hawks are going to be back. It's nice to see that Crawford's skating. That's good. That's a good sign. It's always a good sign. And, yeah, always look forward to hockey season. It's my favorite time of year. So hockey season begins on Thursday night, and you can hear every Hawks game right here on 720 WGN starting on Thursday at 6:30, the puck drop, 6 o'clock pregame right here on 720 WGN. Wrapping up the Cubs score here. But by the way, Kevin Powell is going to join us at some point. We'll figure out what time he's going to join us to talk about sports, and obviously we'll talk more about the Cubs game. He was at the game tonight, or is at the game tonight, and was in the locker room, and he can tell us firsthand what it was like to be there and talk to the boys afterwards. Very disappointing game for the Cubs last night. 402 area code says, maybe as fans we've been in a bubble of media telling us how great the Cubs are, when in reality there are a lot of players, Russell, Contreras, Schwarber, Happ, Hayward, that are merely average. 630 area code says, I can tell you what it was like to be at Wrigley. It was going from such loud noise that you couldn't hear Pat and Ron to deathly quiet as 40,000 people shuffled glumly out. Yeah, saw it on the TVs. 847 says, 69, hands down. Yeah, I'm too young. I'm sure it was an absolute heartbreaker. I know my dad was just ripped apart by it, but I was just too young. I remember watching games when I was a little kid. And my guess is that maybe the first game that my folks took me to might have been 69. Might have been part of the 69 season. So, but I remember all those players and seeing those players play. I got to see all those guys play, which was cool. 815 area code says, don't forget that Contreras, or Contreras, as Pat Hughes says. I love that. Contreras. Pat Hughes is the best, man. Don't forget, Contreras was a non-factor this year with only 9 homers, and he needs to do better. Yeah, there was a lot of underperforming, and there's no question about it. So, anyway. But, yeah. Disappointment. So, Hey, Dan, you ever wonder why it's illegal to remove a mattress tag?
Yes.
Oh, good.
I've also wondered that about the, because that's sometimes on, clothing, clothes, like yeah. Coats and heavy coats and things like that.
Yeah, don't remove the tag. Don't remove the. I've always found it really weird that there's like by law you cannot remove this tag from the mattress. Like, how's anybody going to know? You know, are they going to come in and send an inspector into your bedroom and check out the mattress tag? I've always thought it was a weird thing. This is a weird segue, I realize, but this is what I wanted to talk about after the news. If you're like some Americans, you may live in utter fear of what would happen if you attempted to commit the true crime of brutality by chopping off your mattress tag. That's right, the one that's ominously warning you, under penalty of law, this tag not to be removed. Are the mattress police really determined to bang down your door over a torn mattress tag, though? Would they even know? If you look a little closer, you'll notice a phrase that debunks this urban legend. Three words, except by consumer. Ah. It turns out the warning actually applies to the people who make and sell mattresses, specifically the ones to handle the product before it gets to you, the consumer. The actual federal regulation states that it's unlawful to, quote, remove or mutilate or cause or participate in the removal or mutilation prior to the time any textile fiber product is sold and delivered to the ultimate consumer. Any stamp, tag, label, or other identification required by this subchapter to be affixed to such textile fiber product, and any person violating this section shall be guilty of an unfair method of competition and an unfair or deceptive act of, or practice under the Federal Trade Communications Act. But why all the drama about a silly little label? It's one of those things with an interesting backstory. It begins in the early 20th century when mattress makers and sellers were engaging in some pretty shady business tactics. At the time, mattress makers were known to cut corners by stuffing the mattress with some really repulsive garbage, like discarded food, old rags, and horse hair. Inevitably, this would attract lice, bed bugs, and any number of unwelcome bedfellows. It's safe to say that they were not luxury mattresses. So the government had a bright idea. Let's require manufacturers to attach labels to new mattresses stating all the materials used to make them. Mattress salespeople found a clever workaround, though. Just rip the tag and sell the bacteria-filled products to unsuspecting customers. As soon as the government caught on to these shenanigans, they required the addition of "do not remove," the "do not remove" message to be included by law on every mattress tag. Wow. Did you know that story?
No, but it is disgusting.
It's repulsive. They would put garbage, discarded food, old rags, and horse hair in your... And then inevitably you can get them cheaper on President's Day. Thank you very much, everybody. Enjoy the...
All right.
Have we ever pinpointed why President's Day is like... why mattresses are discounted for President's Day? I mean, is there some sort of origin for that or some sort of connection that I'm not aware of, the mattresses and presidents?
So this is just me spitballing here, but President's Day is February,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
So it's a holiday for a good chunk of people, not a, you know, I wouldn't say the entire population, but
right.
So, but it's the first, the second major holiday of the year after MLK Day.
Yeah.
But it's February, and there's always that really interesting story, like January 22nd is the most depressing day of the year because it's when the credit card bills are due.
Oh, from Christmas,
from
right.
From Christmas.
Right.
So that might be, so President's Day might be the first major holiday where you're not completely broke after the holidays.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I've just always thought it was funny.
It is funny. It is very strange.
You know, that it's like, it's President's Day, so that means you got to buy a mattress. But no, that logic makes total sense, you know, because that January, you don't want to buy anything. You're right. So right around that time is when maybe the income, is you get a little more cash on you. So that makes sense. Why not buy a mattress?
Why not give it to him for Christmas?
Yeah. See? Dan, did you ever have a futon?
I did own a futon, yes.
Yeah. I had one too.
Was it you also your bed, or
no,
was it?
Yeah. It was just a futon that we had. It was in the living room. Helena and I got it, and so instead of, because the couch that I had, I mean, there was holes in it, springs sticking out of it. I was like, we got to get rid of this couch. This couch has seen much better days. So we decided we'd get a futon, and if we had people come over, you know, to stay, like her family would come over sometimes to stay, and they would sleep on the futon. We would open it up and sleep on the futon. And I had it for about 7 years. And by the time the seventh year rolled around, it wasn't very comfortable anymore. Because it was just like two pieces of wood, like a frame and the mattress, which was not the most comfortable mattress in the world. But do you need certain things to sleep well? Do you have to have like a? I mean, I have a MyPillow, and that works out for me. I have the MyPillow. I use the MyPillow. I sleep on the MyPillow every morning, day, or night, whenever I'm sleeping.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I typically have to have a long sleeve of some sort on. I have problems sleeping in a short sleeve shirt.
Is that right?
Because I just we've talked about this a bit in the past that I'm a warm sleeper. I need to be warm.
Mm-hmm.
And if I wear a short sleeve shirt, I wake up sneezing. So
now,
so,
how does that work out? Is Eileen also? She doesn't, but she likes it cooler, right?
She likes it very cold.
Now, how does that work out?
I wear a sweater. That's how it works out. I mean, it is funny because, like, typically when we're going to sleep, you know, she is in shorts and a t-shirt, and I'm in a hoodie and pajama pants.
That's crazy.
Right.
Now, are you normally, are you cold all the time?
Or
am
cold a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is my dad now. He was never like that. But, he, you know, my dad he's on meds. One of the meds that he's on, he had some heart issues a while ago. And one of the meds that he's on is a pretty good blood thinner. And since he started taking the blood thinner, he gets colder now. Like he has to wear sweaters and things like that. And it's really interesting to go to the movies because my mom is also cold, but it's really interesting to go because, you know, movie theaters are always freezing.
Right.
Like last night at the AMC Rosemont, it was very, very chilly in the theater, which I enjoy, as you know, right. But both my parents did not take off their coat. They had, you know, hoodies on, all that stuff. And that's the way it is. Every time I go to the movies with my folks, they've always got their coats on and stuff. But my dad was never like that before, but now he is, you know. But the thing is, my mom, it's weird because she gets cold as well, but she, like me, has to have a fan on in the bedroom. It's for a couple of reasons. She likes the fan and also and also the noise, which is the reason I like it too, because I like to have the cool air. And I have it at the foot of my bed. And it helps me stay cool, and it also, you know, the noise helps me to go to sleep, or it's comforting. Drives my dad crazy. Drives my dad crazy. He's like, it would be like you and Eileen, because my dad is like underneath all kinds of covers and stuff, and my mom's got the fan going, but it's pretty interesting. But yeah, I like it. I like it pretty cold. When I go to sleep, the fan's got to be on.
Right.
And
when I walk into a hotel room, I turn off the air conditioning and increase the heat. You drop it.
I drop it to like 50. I just however many days I don't touch it. It's just like I turn it all the way down, and then, you know, it was really funny when Dana DiLorenzo, my future ex-wife, came to visit me in my room when we were at Flashback together. She came up to my room, and we hung out. She came in. She's like, God, it's cold in here. And I'm like, yes, it is. That's the way I like to keep the hotel room. So anyway, well, let's take a quick break. And that's why mattresses, but you ever have how long have you, you know, you're supposed to, how often are you supposed to replace a mattress? What is it? Every
8, I heard.
8 years?
At least that's what the ad campaign is.
Okay. Because I'm coming up on that. So, but my mattress is still very comfortable. I don't know. Seems fine to me. I enjoy my mattress. So, I don't know. Well, anyway, 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in on this. If you ever removed a tag and thought you were going to go to jail, what do you need in order to sleep? 312-981-7200. That's the phone number right here on 720 WGN. We'll break and we'll come back with more. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And it's Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday, blah, 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 blah. That is any artist, any song, anything. Get your request in now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Jim requesting a little Artie Shaw, Begin the Begin. Is the song. There you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're talking about your sleeping habits, which we got because we were talking about mattresses and how they used to be stuffed with a bunch of garbage. And that's why there's a tag on the mattress that you're not supposed to remove if you sell or make those mattresses. But then we were talking about sleeping habits. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich, and at 6 o'clock is Steve Cochran for your Wednesday morning drive. And coming up the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. You know, I envy people who can fall asleep anywhere at any time. I just, you know, it takes me, and we've talked about this before, it takes me a minimum of maybe 90 minutes to fall asleep. And that's, I've been like that for many, 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 many years. And my mind is always racing. You know, I'm always thinking about what I have to do or, you know, getting things done or what happened. But I'm always, there's always something in my head all the time. And it just takes so long for my brain to shut off. And it's weird because I don't really have much in my brain, but it takes a while for what little I have in my brain to calm down and allow myself to sleep. And I toss and turn. I mean, and this is every night or every morning when I go to bed. It just takes me so long to shut down. So I know people who can fall asleep. And Dan, you can fall asleep pretty easily, right?
Yeah, you know, at this point I can, yeah. I mean, it oscillates back and forth depending on how busy things are here at the station and the home. But yeah, you know, if everything's calm, it's,
yeah,
you know.
And now with the two kids, that made a difference, obviously.
Right, yeah.
I mean, clearly. That, if anybody who has kids, obviously your sleep is going to be affected big time.
Yeah, I think the normal amount of time it should take you to fall asleep, if I remember correctly, from some of the sleep experts we've had on, is 15 to 20 minutes.
Oh, man.
And so I'm usually out within five, I'd say, wow, on a normal day.
Wow. That's nice. And I was talking about this, you know, we've talked about this before, obviously, these hours that we're on, you know, inevitably at some point you will talk about sleep or sleep patterns or how you get your rest or how you sleep, especially when you work a shift like this. And I've talked about this before with the great Orion Samuelson. Orion is one of those guys. Orion says that he can fall asleep anytime, anywhere. It takes him 2 seconds. And he can take like a power. He's one of those guys who can take like a power nap. You know, like I fall asleep for 5 to 10 minutes and I feel refreshed. What? That to me is just like that.
It's insane. He could also tell his body like, all right, I need to sleep for 3 minutes. And then
isn't that insane?
Yeah, that's insane.
It's cool. I mean, it's really cool. And, you know, I really wish that I had that sort of power to be able to fall asleep anytime, anywhere, quickly, and, you know, let my body know how much sleep I need. And it's not like I'm uncomfortable because, like I said, my mattress is comfortable. I like my sheets and my comforter and all that stuff. And I've got a MyPillow, which works for me. I really enjoy it. So I am comfortable, and I'm laying there comfortably thinking about stuff that I shouldn't be thinking about when I should be snoring. So, but yeah, if you have sleeping pattern problems, 312-981-7200. If you're up now, you probably do. There's probably something going on. 872 area code says, I used to sleep with the smooth jazz radio station on. I had to stop when the station played Christmas music because it gave me violent nightmares. Is that a joke, or is that for real? Like, did...
Well, I mean, if you go from jazz to
Christmas music,
yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a big swing.
It is big swing. See,
there you go.
Oh yeah.
Well, like the smooth jazz radio stations. Did you ever wake up with, you know, the guy going, "All right, it's night time, and here's some smooth jazz." See, that would give me nightmares. If I had that guy, you know, the smooth jazz overnight dude with the deep voice and the reverb popping in every once in a while. You know, when I was younger, I used to go to sleep, and for many years, I used to go to sleep with this radio station on. Or, you know, other radio stations as well. I would have talk radio on. I would go to sleep. I was one of those weirdo kids, I'm grateful for it because this is now what I do for a living, and I got started listening to talk radio, particularly this radio station, when I was a little kid. So it's been a part of my life since as far back as I can remember. But I used to listen to the overnight. I used to listen to the late night guys all the time, either on IND or here on GN, and I could fall asleep. I mean, I'd listen for a little while, but I'd fall asleep. Then if I woke up, I'd still have, you know, the radio on. Because that was before the technology where you have the, you know how you have the clock radio now where you can just hit it for 60 minutes or 40 minutes right. or something and it'll play and it'll go off automatically. So, yeah, that was that's changed though. I mean, if I had talk radio on, if I were sleeping at night and I had like talk radio on, I wouldn't be able to sleep. I would be listening to everything because my brain would not be shutting down because I'm listening to something and trying to process what I'm listening to, and that wouldn't help me.
I can't listen to talk radio when I'm not here because I'm producing the show in my head. And
oh yeah,
because it's like
yeah,
I'm like oh something's wrong. They should have taken a break there, or you know.
I do the same thing, although you know you do much more during this show than I do. I'm just an idiot talking into a microphone. And you do a lot more work, so I can understand it being a little bit more stressful. But you know, being in this business for as long as I have, listening to other radio shows, and knowing when something goes screwy,
right?
It is a little bit like oh man. Steve says, in the 70s, my stepfather and I had a business where we made beanbag chairs. We had to have those law labels printed up and sewn into every beanbag chair. Anybody still have a beanbag chair? Do you know anybody that still has a beanbag chair?
Dan? I want to say I do, but it's, you know, it's like, it's in a basement. It's just... You know, somebody was getting rid of it, so they have it. And
they were big in the 70s.
Oh, sure.
You know, and we went through a few beanbag chairs over the course of time in that decade. I had one when I lived with Scott. When I lived with Oaken, we had a beanbag chair, and that was in the mid 90s. Early and mid 90s, still had a beanbag chair. You know, the worst is when you pop a hole in a beanbag chair. You ever have a?
Oh, and the little beads come out.
And the little beans come out, and they're all over the living room. Yeah, beanbag chairs. Those are some things, man. The 70s. Dan, do you ever recall seeing this specific lamp, which is a statue of like a woman.
Okay.
And it looks like a garden, and there's fake leaves and fake garden stuff around it, and it's a lamp. It hangs from the ceiling. It's a, I don't know. It's about 2.5 feet long. 2 feet long, maybe, and it's so you got this little statue in the middle, and it's like it lights up, and there were wires that were on an angle, several wires that were on an angle that wrapped around it, and oil came down on the it would just recycle oil would come down on these wires to make it look as though it were raining.
Oh wow. That's crazy.
That was a huge 70s thing. And the movie Detroit Rock City, the movie about the kids in 70s who go to see Kiss, they have one of those one of the opening shots of the movie. They have one of those lamps with the oil, so it looks like I'm sure you can Google it. You can see like oil, you know, like it looks like it's raining oil lamp, and it looks like a garden. It looks like there's a statue in the garden, and it's raining, but it's actually oil dripping.
Oh yeah,
you see it.
That's pretty crazy.
They were in everybody's house in the 70s. Beanbag chairs right next to it. But 70s, man. All right. Let's break here. We got the news coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, or live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 a.m., and it's Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? And it's any artist, anything, any song, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And am I 630 area code requested this. Am I reading this right? The name of the band is Enter the Haggis? Enter the Haggis?
Enter the Haggis.
Are they Scottish? And the song is called Gasoline. Enter the Haggis. I've never heard of that's a pretty original name there. Enter the Haggis. So I would guess that they're Scottish.
There's some Ireland imagery in the video I'm looking at.
Mm. All right. Well, there's
Canadian.
No, come on.
Canadian indie roots rock quintet with a Celtic bend.
They're Canadian?
They're Canadian.
I'm assuming Canadian Bill.
Huge fan.
Will be
follows him on tour.
Probably.
He's actually the lead singer.
Enter the Haggis from Canada. Okay. Never cease to be surprised on Wild Card.
Well, what was the other Irish band that was made of Canadians that we were...
Oh, yeah, I can't remember. They were, they were from Canada, and they were, it wasn't the Clancy Brothers, was it?
I don't think so.
No, it wasn't the Clancy Brothers, because they're definitely Canadian, or they're definitely Irish. Well, they're Irish, but they were from Canada. I can't remember who it was. But yeah, that blew my mind when I found out that, this Irish group was actually from Canada. Yeah. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We were talking about getting some good sleep. By the way, Kevin Powell is going to join us in about 15 minutes or so. He just finished up covering the Cub game at Wrigley, and we're going to talk about baseball, and we're going to talk about other sports, and Powell at the Park podcasts as well. You can hear him anchoring the sports on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis in afternoons. And we'll get a fresh perspective from Kevin, who was at Wrigley last night and covered everything and was in the locker room after the game. So we'll get some coverage from Kevin coming up in just a little bit. But we were talking about sleep patterns and mattresses and, you know, how you sleep and all that cool stuff. And this is David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
You know, because you're talking about sleep and the 70s and beanbag chairs, I was thinking water beds.
Yeah, waterbeds were pretty popular back in the 70s as well.
Well, my brother, you know, he was 10 years older than me back in the early 70s, and he'd go away to college, and I got to move into his bedroom when he moved out of town. And he had this huge waterbed covering most of his bedroom floor, and I couldn't get used to it. I could never fall asleep in that thing. It was just, I don't know. I mean,
no, I think they're kind of weird, actually. And I remember a buddy of mine whose older brother lived in the basement. He had a waterbed, and we would go down there sometimes, and it would just, it's hard to get used to. But I dated a girl who grew up. My girlfriend Helena, her whole family had waterbeds. They all had waterbeds, and when she moved in with me, that was the first time she ever slept regularly on a regular mattress, not a waterbed.
How was that adjustment for her?
She adjusted okay, I guess. You know, but yeah, when we first started dating, and I would stay over at her place, she had a waterbed, and I'd be like, ugh, you know. It's just a little weird. And when I went, you know, her family lives right outside of Nashville, live in Franklin, Tennessee, and we went down there for a Christmas one time, and the room I stayed in had a water, because nothing but water, they had nothing but water beds in the house.
Was there an explanation why?
They were better for your, you know, like the parents were proponents that it was better for your back, that you would have more sound sleep, and it was more natural, they said, to have a water bed. So they were just a family that raised their kids. They had three kids, two boys and a girl. And this was a family that was raised on waterbeds. And when Helena moved in with me, it was literally the first time that she lived someplace and not slept on a waterbed. So anyway. All right, David, thanks for the call. Yeah, waterbeds, they were also big in the 70s, man. Yeah. That was all like if you were a swinger. Yeah, man, I got a waterbed. Yeah.
We'll have to ask Mary Vandeveld about it when she gets in.
Well, yeah, she has water beds, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, we'll talk to her about that. Let's see, we got some texts that came in as we're talking about sleep patterns and stuff. 501 area code says, "Hey, Nick, I strongly recommend keeping your mattress and buying an adjustable base. I love mine." Oh. Okay. 870 said, "Big O took power naps in the Showcase studio." I know. He's up there in the Showcase studio, 500 people walking around on Michigan Avenue. Oh, he's asleep. 773 area code says, "Ultra long distance runners can sleep restfully for 1 minute." I know. Hey, what's the dude's name who was who would do the endurance? He would be on the spin thing. He was like he would do like 5 days in a row. He would be on the bike, the stationary bike.
George, I want to say.
George, yeah. That's a guy who, when he would, you know, he would save up his rest periods and then sleep for 10 minutes and then get back on the bike for like 18 hours. And not just sitting on the bike, like, you know, pedaling. We've talked to him live. I've had him on when he was breaking all kinds of stationary bike records by being on a stationary bike, constantly pedaling for like days at a time. And he was one of these guys that mastered getting restful sleep in a very, very, very little time. 630 area code says, Nick, did you ever listen to Jay Marvin on WLS back in the 90s? Nah, no, I did not. 630 area code says, yes, they made tabletop versions of the lamps too. It was a blacklight. I was a blacklight poster dude. Yeah, those lamps were everywhere. The lamps with the oil drop, you know, drips coming down on the wires to make it look as though it's raining. And I was a blacklight poster dude. Back in the, Dan, in the 70s, you know, when my parents, we would go down to Old Town. I'm talking like, you know, early 70s. We would go to the head shops. And I didn't know what a head shop was, you know, back then. I didn't know that bongs were bongs and what they were. And I didn't, you know, the incense and the other smells that would come.
The bong marine hadn't been invented yet.
I was not aware of bongs and drug paraphernalia. But every single one of the head shops or every single one of the stores on North and Wells or in that area on Wells all had blacklight poster rooms. So you would be walking around, and then you suddenly go into the room with just all blacklight posters on the wall. Because, you know, they had, like, posters were a big thing, too, in the 70s. You can go and buy, like, a poster of a peace sign or, you know. But they would have blacklight posters every place. Bazaar was one of them. There were a bunch of head shops, where you could get your pot paraphernalia and a blacklight poster in the same building. Kill two birds with one stone if you smoke weed. 847 area code says, I gave one to my niece 2 years ago, and that's what she wanted for her B day at the age of 10. What did she give? What did they give?
I'm guessing the lamp based upon the
proximity. Oh, the lamp? Boy, she was 10 and she wanted one for her birthday? One of those crazy lamps? Okay. Michael says, I have to have the ceiling fan on low, and I have to have talk radio on. WGN is my favorite. I'm a double amputee. Your show has kept me company for years. I live near Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and it comes in great, and that's the only way I can sleep. Well, I'm glad I can help you out. Thank you for listening, Michael. I appreciate that. I really do. 630 area code says, I have a bad habit of falling asleep in front of the TV trying to get the weather for the next day. I wake up and have to do dishes and make lunches and set up coffee for the next day. By the time I do that, I can't fall asleep. three, 3-1 area code says, I'm retired now, but I used to teach and would go to bed with my brain would not stop. I tried starting with the letter A and would name 6 places that begin with A and then go on with the rest of the alphabet. Usually by H, I'd be asleep. I could remember in the morning what was the last letter that I played with this mind game. It works when I can't turn my mind off. Oh, I'll have to try that. I will have to try that. You know? Anybody actually really count sheep? Is that something that you do? So, all right. Yeah, we all have weird sleep patterns. I'm just one of those. I'm one of these people. It takes about 90 minutes for me to fall asleep. There's just no question about it. I lay in bed. My brain goes nuts. I keep thinking and sometimes I worry about certain things and that I shouldn't even be worried about. So, anyway, I think that's one of the reasons why I love the song Overkill so much by Men at Work by Colin Hay, because that's kind of what that song is about. So, all right. Well, we've all got problems with our sleep, so we'll help each other out. Let's help each other out, shall we? All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we were going to hear from Kevin Powell. He's going to be with us live. He covers Chicago baseball for us, and he anchors sports on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes in the afternoons. You can follow him on Twitter at KPowell720. He was at Wrigley last night, and has been covering it all, and we'll get his thoughts and on other sports as well. And if you have a comment or a question, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mateer and Joe Donlin, weekends on WGN-TV News at 9.
Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and my main man Steve Cochran has morning drive at 6. Bill Withers. Now, when you hear Bill Withers, you immediately think Kevin Powell, as everybody should. Kevin Powell covers Chicago baseball for us, and he anchors sports on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes every afternoon, weekdays. You can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720. He joins us to talk sports every once in a while. And he was just finishing up his duties and reporting over at Wrigley for the wild card game from last night that ended so disappointingly. And we want to get Kevin's thoughts on that and a bunch of other sports things, including talking about his Powell at the Park podcasts and blog posts. So let's welcome Kevin to the show. Hey, Kevin.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Yeah, I'm still here at Wrigley thanks to that wild card game lasting 4 hours and 55 minutes. It was the longest postseason game in Wrigley Field history, 13 innings. Cubs, of course, coming out on the losing end, 2-1. An abrupt end to the Cubs season, Nick, just like that. Two games, back-to-back days, and boom. Season's over. A disappointing finish for the season.
Very disappointing season, very disappointing. I'll tell you what, it was. It's not pleasant to watch two opposing teams in a row celebrate on the field at Wrigley. That's just not. Mm-hmm. That's not fun.
Yeah. Somebody was as the game was wrapping up. Somebody was joking about the away team clubhouse, which isn't exactly a state of the art anything. It's a bit. It's part of the old school Wrigley, and someone said, "Yeah, is it going to end up collapsing after back-to-back days of celebrating inside there?" So I'm sure it is drenched with champagne and beer and all that stuff because the Rockies are headed to the NLDS to play the Brewers, and the Cubs are done. Nick, to be honest with you, it's sort of surprising to say this considering the Cubs won 95 games, but it did really just feel like they never hit their stride this year and never played their best baseball. So honestly, it's not all that surprising. And Joe Maddon said after the game, he goes, "Look, we've played that exact game before all season long, where you get good pitching, they just cannot string hits together, and they can't come up with a big hit on offense. One run on 6 days, two runs in the two biggest games of the season in back-to-back days. Yeah. That can't happen." So,
no, you're right.
Yeah, the offense just fell apart here the past 2 days.
There's no question about it. There's absolutely no question about it, and it really is disappointing. I wasn't able to watch the game, Kevin, because I had last night I had a screening of one of my favorite horror movies of all time, Phantasm, at AMC Rosemont 18. But it was funny because I got to see the first two innings because the movie started at 8. So I got to see the first two innings, and so it was 1-0 when we started the game. And then, or when we started the movie, and then when the movie ended, I do a post-show talk. As you know, you've been to a couple of my film clubs.
Yeah.
So I immediately said, "Okay, what's the score?" Before I started, launched in, it was still 1-0. So basically, we missed nothing.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know what? It looked like because that first inning looked like it was going to be a bigger number for the Rockies than it ended up being. Give credit to John Lester. I mean, he was just absolutely outstanding tonight. He kept them in the game. The bullpen kept them in the game. Lester went 6-plus innings. I think it was 9 strikeouts for him. So he just gives up one run. And then Javi Baez, I mean, like I said, this is such a fitting game kind of to the whole season where you get a great start. I know the starting pitchers kind of hit a rough patch this year, weren't going too deep into games. But if you look at their numbers over the past month, they've been outstanding. So you got good starting pitching. The bullpen somehow strung together some more zeros. Kyle Hendricks ended up giving up that final run in the 13th. But Javi Baez, too. Javi Baez with the driving in the run in the 8th inning and Wrigley just about erupted. So kind of everything we saw throughout the season was exposed again today on the final game of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get to see it till I started watching it, you know, because as I was doing my post-movie talk, somebody said, "Hey, they just tied it up." So I didn't see that. I started watching it from the bottom of the 9th on. And so that's what I saw, and unfortunately, I did see the ending.
It was some intense stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it. And you know, Javi Baez, let me ask you about this. Let me ask you, the hug. What? Because they were going on ESPN. They were going nuts. For those people who don't know, you know, Javi was running to third, and he got caught in a rundown, almost a rundown, and he was tagged out. But he hugged the third baseman.
Nolan Arenado, who's one of the best third basemen in baseball, he kind of got, there was a ground ball, Baez was trying to go from second to third, Arenado grounded a ball and was trying to go tag Baez, and, you know, it looked like Baez was trying to get around him, so they were both sort of in, like, that football linebacker position, and then everyone started to realize, like, the play was over, Arenado just tagged him, and they kind of went into this weird little, like, bro hug. So, I don't know. You know what, to be honest, we didn't even ask Javi about it, because, like, that feels like it was 3 days ago for how long we've been here originally, it was kind of not top on mind for a lot of people. I just think it's just because that's how Javi is. He's just a showman. He always seems to have fun and do something goofy on the field.
Well, so. But they went nuts on ESPN, because at that,
in a bad way?
Yeah, because in a bad way.
About what?
You know, first of all, Contreras was up, and he had, like, cramps or something. He, like, you know, during that at-bat, if you remember, he had, like, cramps. Yeah. And they had to bring out the trainer. They gave him some fluids and stuff, and he took some time between the pitches, and he couldn't really run. He was kind of limping. So the people on ESPN, can't remember who the play-by-play people were on ESPN, but they said that
A-Rod, well, there's A-Rod and Mendoza and Vestergaard.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So they said that Javi Baez did it on purpose to avoid the double play.
I thought that maybe could have been an issue, and I know Bud Black, the Rockies manager, went out there to talk about it.
Right.
I guess it could be taken away, but I didn't think he was trying to do that. Plus, I don't think Arenado had a shot at the guy at first. Was it Contreras running?
It was Contreras.
Yeah, you know what? I think I realized that case. I'm going to have to go back and look at it, but it didn't look like by the time Arenado was getting ready to tag Baez, it looked like he didn't even have a shot at first base.
Well,
but
it's not not only that, though, Kev, but like Arenado, like when Javi, you know, like hugged him, he didn't react like, "Hey, jerk, you're stopping me from throwing the ball to first."
Arenado kind of went with it.
He did.
He gave him a little hug himself.
Arenado
was not trying to push him away or anything like that. It was just, I think that was probably a bit of an overreaction. I think if they probably took another look at it, they'd probably agree that it was just sort of friendly fire on both sides.
Yeah, goofy Baez. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Kevin, hang on, okay, Kev?
All right, man.
Yeah, there you go. Kevin Powell is with us. He's live at Wrigley Field, and we're going to get some firsthand stuff from Kevin. He was in the locker room after the game, and we got more sports to talk about as well. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. The news is up after this.
Go, 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 Chicago Cubs. Win that game. Go, 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 Chicago Cubs. Get that pennant fame. Don't forget, Chicago Cubs. We do care for you. And you bet, Chicago Cubs, we are loyal to single, double, triple, home run.
I love this. I love that song. That's Marie Fuller, Go, 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 Chicago Cubs. She recorded that song for the 1969 Cubs, which also had a very disappointing ending to their season, just as the Cubs did this morning, late last night, early morning here. It's Nick DiGilio. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 a.m. Kevin Powell, he covers sports for us. He anchors the sports on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes. And you can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720, kpowell720. And he's at Wrigley right now, been there all night, and we're talking about this very disappointing end to the Cubs season of the wild card game, the loss to the Rockies. Kevin, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So what was it like? Let's talk, you know, we've covered the fact that it was very disappointing and that the Cubs lost. Their season is over. What was it like in that locker room afterwards? And tell me a little bit about who you spoke to.
Well, we spoke to just about all the main players here, core players. Definitely some disappointment, definitely some frustration. John Lester said Javi Baez was in tears. That's how upset he was. Mm. I mean, this is a year for Javi Baez. These don't happen often. This is a year where Javi Baez is going to get a ton of MVP votes. So just a great year for him. Chris Bryant was probably one of the most frustrated players because of the entire season that he dealt with, particularly he had that nagging left shoulder and missed a whole bunch of time. So he seemed very determined and focused to make sure next year he's healthy and playing in an MVP caliber style that we've seen him play. I mean, he's a former MVP already. He's in, year three or four of his career. So, I think, Javi Baez did admit that, we asked him, what was up with this year? Why did it feel like they never really hit their stride? And he says, he admitted they were looking into other teams too much. They were scoreboard watching because of the injuries that they had. I mean, Yu Darvish went down. Bryant missed a lot of time. Brandon Morrow wasn't available this postseason. I mean, how much different could it have been down the stretch here with Brandon Morrow, their closer? So, he said they got to stop paying attention to other teams and focus on what they do. So, I think the good news here is that they won 95 games. And when you consider everything that they dealt with this year with the injuries, Darvish, Tyler Chatwood basically gave them nothing, Bryant's injury, Morrow's injury, Addison Russell off-the-field stuff, underperformance from guys like Wilson Contreras in the second half, they still won 95 games and had a chance to win a division, had a chance to go back to the NLDS for the third straight year. So that's the good news. I think for the offseason, the to-do list for Theo Epstein and the front office and Joe Maddon is, first of all, get all these guys healthy. Figure out what's going on with Yu Darvish, get Chris Bryant fully healthy, and come back focused for spring training. But, this core isn't going anywhere for a while. You're still going to have the Rizzos and the Bryants and the Contreras's and the Baezes, Hayward. So, I think they're in a really good spot, but this felt like an underperforming year for the Cubs despite all those wins that they did get.
Yeah, no, it's true. It is true, and that is how it felt. We were talking, Dan and I were talking at the top of the show about speculating about what kind of changes will be made, and we're both kind of under the impression that Chile's going to be the sacrifice here.
Yeah, I don't know if I would. I'm interested to see that. Theo Epstein's probably going to talk tomorrow, so he's going to get drilled with those questions. This offense seemed to have taken a step back with Chile Davis as the hitting coach. Now, I'll say this too. I don't think the hitting coach matters all that much. I don't think the reason the offense was up and down all year is because John Mailey left and Chile Davis was brought in. I think hitting coaches probably take a little too much heat. I don't know if Chile Davis will be out, to be honest with you. I think it's Joe Maddon's staff will probably mostly stay intact. But I think you're going to see Theo Epstein be aggressive this offseason because he's aggressive pretty much every offseason, yeah. No matter what. He's aggressive at the trade deadline. So don't be surprised if you see something from Theo that's a blockbuster type thing. I don't have to take a closer look at, maybe some options they have. But, Theo, the Cubs realize this is a championship window here. And every year they don't win a World Series, it's just sort of let down. There was a fan today I saw with a sign that said one trophy is not enough.
Yeah,
and I agree with the fans. I think both Cub fans would agree where the amount of resources the Cubs have, the amount of talent they have, I think all of us would be a little surprised, and it'd be a little bit of a letdown, as crazy as it sounds, but this is where the Cubs are at. I think it'd be a little bit letdown if this core, this window here over the next 3 to 5 years doesn't bring home at least one more World Series trophy.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people feel that way, Kev. And we were talking a little bit earlier about this. It's like, for the Cubs to make it to the postseason 4 years in a row, Cub fans aren't used to that. You know what I mean?
It's never happened. Yeah.
No, it's never happened. I mean, we're not, in April, Cub fans are not used to saying, yeah, okay, there's a real good chance that we're going to go, make it to the World Series,
or
we will definitely make the postseason. That's not how I grew up thinking. You know what I mean? Like whenever the Cubs made it to the postseason, it was always like a shock and a surprise, and we treasured every moment of it. But now it's like we expect it now.
Right. It's like when they got in the postseason, everything else was just sort of gravy, like the cherry on top. Like, oh my gosh, the Cubs are in. Okay,
yeah,
well,
let's just
we're lucky to be here. Now it's like, the script is flipped a little bit here, and I think that's okay. Cub fans shouldn't, the standard's different here. The expectations are different. Look at the payroll. Look at the resources they have. Look at everything they've poured into this whole thing, from what the Ricketts have done to what Theo's done to, Joe Maddon to the players. So, the standard is World Series right now. And look, that's not the media trying to put some sort of spin on this whole thing. It's not fans trying to put that. The players say it themselves. I mean, we just talked. I just talked to all these guys in there, and it's if they don't win the World Series, it's pretty much considered a bust at this point. Despite winning all these games, division fighting for division titles, all that, the real goal is the World Series. And you know, the Cubs thought of old, where yeah, it was let's just get into the postseason. This is wonderful, and everything is gravy. That's not the case anymore. The case right now is the Cubs are the class of the National League. I still think they are. I mean, everybody's got their target and their eyes set on the Cubs. The standard is win a World Series right now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Listen, let me ask you, we talked a little bit about some of the players. What was Joe Maddon's attitude like, and what was his presence like in the locker room?
He said he was proud of his guys. Normally what you'd expect from Joe, trying to make take at least a positive spin on sorts of things. But, he was scratching his head as much as the fans were and all of us in the media were about this offense. He goes, look, we got to figure it out. That's what we got to figure out this offseason is the offense. Got to figure that out by spring training. So he was adamant about that. And, you know, he also said this game 164 here was sort of a microcosm of the entire season where they got great pitching. They just couldn't come up with a timely hit. They couldn't string together quality at bat. Yeah. So I think Joe Maddon saw what just about everybody else saw.
Yeah. Okay. Well, end of a very disappointing end to a Cubs season that was alternately great and frustrating all season long.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's well put, Nick. Yeah. I completely agree.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the Sox. They wrapped up their season. Let's see where their heads are at now. They were 62-100. They were fourth in the AL Central. Obviously not a good season for them. But again, this is a rebuilding time. We've talked about this all season. Did you interview the guys for after their season ended?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of it's you can't just look at the big league level for the White Sox right now. So as all of us were, of course, monitoring what was going on, because there are certain guys that are up on the big league club right now that you are anticipating, we're all anticipating and projecting, could be major contributors to a championship quality White Sox team. But there's also a lot of guys still down in the minor leagues. So guys like Eloy Jimenez and Dane Dunning and Dylan Cease and those guys, you're going to hear those names a lot. So, you know, if I had to put a grade on it, it's kind of tough to say because you can't look at wins and losses right now. It's more about individual growth.
Right.
Yoel Moncada probably didn't have the year that we were anticipating, but he did finish strong. Lucas Giolito, not a great year. Reynaldo Lopez, though, looked like he could be a middle-of-the-rotation legitimate guy on a really good team. So definitely some bright spots. In the minor leagues, that's where it really showed that this thing's heading in the right direction. I mean, of course, the Michael Kopech injury is devastating. But you got Eloy Jimenez, who looks like he's going to be a perennial all-star in the big leagues. You got a guy like Dylan Cease, who some people think could be just as good as Michael Kopech as well. So, a lot of positives, obviously a lot of frustrations for the White Sox fans and the team. But the whole thing is still heading in a very, very good direction.
Okay. You have video up about on your podcast and on the website of Hawk Harrelson on retiring from broadcasting. What was that like?
Well, it's cool to get to talk to Hawk because, look, I grew up Hawk to some is sort of like this dying breed of these baseball broadcasters who are baseball lifetimers. Like, I mean, look, Harry Carey. This town's been blessed with some great broadcasters. I don't know if I'm necessarily comparing those guys, but they're kind of in that same world, right? Where it's personality in the broadcast booth. So I listen to Hawk. I know some people like him, some people hate him. I loved listening to Hawk. He was a homer, and I loved that about him. I loved all his little sayings, so his little catchphrases. It was cool to get to talk to him. White Sox fans will forever continue to utter his catchphrases until the end of time. The he gone and grab some bench and all those sorts of things. So
he's a
major part of White Sox.
Can of corn. Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah.
I love listening to Hawk. I thought he was awesome.
And Red Sox were the Carmines. That was another
That's right.
I am in the camp of not liking him, Kevin. I'm not a big Hawk Harrelson fan because I'm a, you know, obviously he says a lot of nasty stuff about the Cubs and Wrigley Field, so I don't.
Cubs fans don't like him.
No, Cubs fans, we do not like him. But you know what? He had an incredible career. You got to acknowledge that, an incredible career. He's a broadcast legend. There's no question about it. And I thought that was a really nice, classy moment. When all the guys did a tip of the hat to him, I thought that was a really great moment for a guy who's had such a long and illustrious career.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I thought that was a great moment. And then talking to the players, a lot of them just had nothing but great things to say about Hawk. Hawk's always in the clubhouse after the game and kind of encouraging the players, talking to them a little bit. So he's a major part of the team, not just the broadcast team, but I think he meant a lot to a lot of the players too.
There's no question about it. All right, what a great career he's had. All right, before we break, Kevin, because we're going to come back and we're going to talk football because last Bears game, my God. But a listener, David, he couldn't hang on. He says, do you think that Addison Russell will be back? Well, that's a pretty complicated issue right there.
Yeah, I don't think he will. I don't think he'll ever play for the Cubs yet.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And there's a lot of reasons why. So, anyway. All right, Kev, hang on, okay?
All right,
buddy. Kevin Powell is with us, and when we come back, we're going to switch over from baseball into football and talk about that last Bears game. And we'll do a little Hawk talk, too. We just not Hawk Harrelson talk. We just did that. Blackhawks talk, because the season starts on Thursday at 6:30. It's the puck drop in Ottawa. 6 o'clock pregame here on WGN, 6:30 for your puck drop. And we'll talk more sports with Kev right after this. That's right. Bear down, Chicago Bears. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. We're going to be talking about great character actors after I give you a whole bunch of amazing facts about Wilford Brimley, who is one of the best character actors and one of those guys, one of those great classic character actors. That's coming up. Also, we're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. And Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Right now we're talking with our buddy Kevin Powell, who does the sports for the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis every afternoon here on WGN. KPowell720, at KPowell720 is to follow him on Twitter. And let's welcome Kevin back. Kevin, welcome back.
Thanks again for having me.
Absolutely, buddy. So how about that Bears game on Sunday, huh?
That was something. That was one of the more fun Bears games we've seen in a long time. Mitch Trubisky had probably the best performance ever for a Bears quarterback in Bears history. So that was just awesome. I mean, it was complete destruction of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who, yes, have a bad secondary, but it's like the Bears squeaked by here. The Bears completely dominated from start to finish, and they dominated in all facets of the game. So it was a great exclamation point to the first month of the season. They're on a three-game winning streak. They're in first place. They're heading into a bye week. They're relatively healthy. They got Khalil Mack, who, outside of Patrick Mahomes, not only looks like defensive player there, he looks like he should at least get some consideration for MVP in the early going here. So a lot of good things happening with the Bears.
Yeah, Mack is a beast. That guy's a beast, man.
yeah, you know, I love watching him play because, I mean, he does have all the tricks, the moves that a defensive lineman has, but for the most part, he just does everything so fundamentally sound. He bull rushes guys, he uses his leverage, and he's just such a ball hawk. He always gets his hand on the ball. He forced four fumble in all four games so far. He's got a sack in all four games.
Yeah.
He's been absolutely dominant, and it makes the rest of the defense better.
Yeah, and now, so you know, Dan and I were talking a little bit off the air about this. It's we think it's kind of unfortunate that they have a bye week now.
Yeah,
because like the momentum that they're on right now, man, you want to see him keep playing, especially after this last game.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. I think a lot of people felt that way, especially for fans, probably feel the same way the Bears do, where it's like, oh my God, I just want to keep seeing more of this and more of this. They're actually fun to watch. This is awesome. We haven't seen this since like the Brian Urlacher-led teams when those guys were good. And even those were a lot more frustrating than this, because this is an offense that's still needs to prove itself. But, man, Mitch Trubisky threw for six touchdowns. So I think with this offense, there's a lot more hope than what we've seen before on the offensive side of the ball. And then defensively, I think the Bears have pretty much established themselves as a top two or three defense in all of football.
Yeah. Well, so what do you think about they play the Dolphins next weekend, and then what do you think about that matchup and looking at the rest of the Bears schedule, is it looking good for them or is it going to be a struggle for these guys?
I mean, it's some tough matchups. I mean, I realize Minnesota's off to a tough start, but Minnesota's going to play the Bears tough. They still got another matchup with the Packers, and they still got matchups with the Lions as well, and they got a matchup with Tom Brady, the Patriots, and the Rams too. So not the easiest of schedules, but I think this defense has shown the Bears are probably going to be able to at least stick around in just about every game or at least have a chance to win a game. Yeah, I mean, things are looking good. I'm not trying to go full-blown, you know, Bears optimism here that we see in this town like every year, but 3-1, first place, and a lot of good things happening. So should the playoffs be on your radar? Yeah, I think they should.
Okay, cool. It'll be fun to see what happens. I will say this. It's really fun to listen to OB and Hampton with Kozlowski on Sundays. You never know what they're going to say. They actually praised the quarterback this past show. So.
Yeah, it was sort of phrasing. It was
yeah.
Those guys are they're tough sell, but yeah, that's the best Bears post game show in town.
No,
and we have OB on every week with Rowan. It's just a joy to talk to the guys.
He's a blast. He really is. All right, let's talk Blackhawks. The regular season begins on Thursday, 6 o'clock is for the pregame right here, and then 6:30 is your puck drop. And Corey Crawford has been cleared for practice, but he's not going to start for a while. Ward is going to be in the net, right?
Yeah, it sounds like October 18th is the target date for Crawford to return. He's still dealing with the concussion. Well, I shouldn't say he's still dealing with the concussion. He's working back. He's been medically cleared. He's got back-to-back full practices with the team, which is a very encouraging sign. But at this point now, it's not necessarily about being medically okay. It's just, you know, natural rust that's going to build. He hasn't played since December. So I think they're going to give it about 4 or 5 games. Not ideal, but it's, you know, if you gotta get Crawford right. If the Blackhawks are going to win anything or go back to the postseason, they need a fully healthy, confident Corey Crawford. And I think they're going to be patient with it as well. So the Hawks are trying to buy some time here for 5 or 6 games and then get Crawford back into that.
Well, they went 2-4 in the preseason, and again, it's preseason. I didn't watch every period. I will watch every period of the regular season, but I didn't watch every period of the preseason. What I did watch, they looked, you know, they looked okay. And again, you know, it depends on how much ice time guys are getting. But their first game is Thursday. First regular season game is Thursday. Did you watch any of the preseason games?
Yeah, a little bit. Like you said, it's tough to tell really what's going on in the preseason because guys are trying out little things here and there. I think for me is, can some of these core guys like Taves and Seabrook and the guys we've seen here now for so long, can they get back to that level that we were used to seeing for so long? Because Seabrook didn't have a great year last year, neither did Taves.
Right.
Keith was no okay. Kane was still Kane. I mean, Kane's, you know, on a different planet. That's
yeah,
how good he is.
Yeah.
We know what we're going to get with him. Because I think there is some real excitement about some of these younger guys. Yoki Haru, DeBrinket. There's a new young core that's kind of developing as this core that we've been used to is still around. So I realize everyone's, how can the young guys contribute? Well, how can the old, quote, old guys contribute? Can Seabrook get back? Apparently he showed up in great shape, lost some weight. He's determined to get back to playing at a high level. And, of course, Jonathan Taves is too. So I'm really interested to see how much more this core has in them and if they've got, you know, a couple more rides left in them.
Yeah, and we're going to need Saad to step up too. There's no question about that. I mean, the Saad Schmaltz Kane line, that's, you know, especially Saad's going to have to step up. It was kind of disappointing, and everybody was talking about how they missed the bread man. So,
yeah, no question. Saad probably didn't have the best training camp. Q called him ordinary in the second to last postseason game. So maybe he's trying to light a fire under the guy. But yeah, I'd love to see Saad have a big year.
Yeah.
And I'm just pumped. Now that baseball's over, it's pretty much football and hockey for me the rest of the way. So I'm ready, Nick. Let's dust off the Indian head and get the sweaters out of the closet.
Oh, yeah. I said one of the only bright sides of this is that I'm not going to be flipping channels on Thursday. I'm just gonna. I'm just gonna be dialed in. It's about to be dialed in on the Blackhawks. All right. What are we looking at for the Bulls? Their first game is October 18th, and they just Lauri Markkanen just had an elbow injury, and he's out now.
Yeah, elbow for 6 day week. That's not good. Denzel Valentine dealing with a minor ankle issue as well. So some injuries early on for Bulls camp. I think if they're fully healthy, because the Eastern Conference in the NBA is just really not good, especially since LeBron James left, pretty much all the good teams are in the West. I wouldn't say it's a complete stretch that the Bulls could make the playoffs, believe it or not. Mostly just because they're in the East. So I'm expecting some improvement. They got to stay healthy. Some of these young guys that they want to build around, like Markkanen and Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn, haven't been able to play all that much together because they've all dealt with injuries. So I really want to see what this team looks like when young guys that are part of this rebuild all can play together and build some rhythm and some timing and things like that. So it's a rebuild for the Bulls, but it's the NBA for you. They're not going to win anything of significance, but they might be able to sneak into the playoffs for the first round.
Yeah. Okay. All right, and we'll find out in a couple of weeks how the Bulls do because the first game is on October 18th. Kev, I really appreciate you. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's late, but I really appreciate you taking the time. You'd normally be getting up at this time a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, but that was almost 3 years ago already. But yeah, I know. I'm sure most of the morning show right now is kind of getting out of bed. I'm sure Dave's, you know, making sure his hair's all nice and perfect.
Exactly. Yes.
And getting that, you know, making sure he looks good for the day, no matter. And I don't know how Dave does it. He gets up at 2:30 in the morning. And he looks better than most people who wake up at, like, normal hours, like 7 or 8 in the morning.
The man, when he shows up here, like, towards the end of my show, and I see him on the camera in the sports department, handsome as hell.
Handsome as hell. He's got the hair, and not a single hair is out of place.
Exactly.
He's got, you know, a nice sharp-looking wardrobe going on. Mr. Cat's the man.
He's the man. All right. Again, thanks a lot, man. And thank you for all the coverage that you did and have some fun. You'll talk about this again later today, actually, on the Rokan show.
Can't thank you enough, man. I really appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kevin. Kevin Powell, everybody, covering sports for the Rokan show and Andy DeVellantis, and joins us every once in a while and gave us some exclusive comments from he covered he was in the locker room after the Cubs series ended. All right. Well, we got the news coming up right after this. Canadian Bill requesting Canadian Bill. That's William Shatner and Jeff Cook, Beam Me Up. Now, I'm judging by the chorus and a little bit of the lyrics there, I'm assuming it's Jim Beam Me Up. That would be, I realize that's a reference to Star Trek, but they're talking about getting drunk, and I would imagine it's Jim Beam Me Up.
You are correct.
All right. There you go. Hey, did we ever find out with the Irish band that came from Canada?
Oh, no, I think we got lost in that.
Oh, okay. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Wildcard Wednesday. You hear me, Wildcard Wednesday? Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. And I've got some fantastic facts about Wilford Brimley. And Wilford Brimley is one of these guys that, you know, he's one of these great character actors that you recognize. And then I want to get into some of the great character actors. Now, some of these character actors, and I love to talk about these guys because the character actors are, you know, they're those guys that you see in everything. There's that, oh, that guy was in this movie, and you recognize them right away. You may not know their name, but these guys are like, you know, the core of great, of great character actors. And you remember them. You might not know their name, but they do great work. They appear in a lot of movies, and you just look at them and go, oh, that guy. I know that guy, and you never really know their name. So we're going to put a name to the face, some of these great character actors. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Who are some of your favorite character actors? You know them, you see them in everything, and then you kind of go, oh, wait, that guy. 312-981-7200. But we'll start off with some Wilford Brimley facts. You know, he just turned 84 at the end of September. And so now we've got some facts about Wilford Brimley. Interesting thing about Wilford Brimley, this is what freaks me out. He was my age. I'm 53. He was my age when he made Cocoon. Just think about think about that for a moment. He's looked like an old man for a very long time. He was only 53 years old when he made Cocoon. I always, when I heard about that, I was like, how is that even remotely possible? But it's true. He was 53 years old when he made Cocoon. He's been making movies for a really, really long time. And everybody loves Wilford Brimley, particularly Craig Ferguson and his wife. We have a little, this was a bit with Craig Ferguson talking about Wilford Brimley with Jeff Peterson, the gay robot sidekick that would be voiced by Josh Robert Thompson. And this is Craig relaying a story about seeing Wilford Brimley in public.
Hey, wait, you have to hear this. I'm sorry to interrupt a really great story, but I was in the grocery store the other day. You know who I saw at the salad bar? Wilfred Brimley! At the salad bar! Wilfred Brimley! Cocoon! At the salad bar! Helping himself to salad! I thought, doesn't he have diabetes?
Did he yell at you about diabetes? Like he does in those commercials? I want you to pick up the phone right now! Or I'll kill you!
Over and say, good for you, Wilfred Brimley, you're getting salad because you've got diabetes.
Hey, why the hell are you staring at me while I'm at the salad bar?
You know the worst thing, boss? My wife took a photograph on her iPhone. She's like, Wilfred Brimley! He's like, ah!
I'm a decent man, I'm trying to eat a salad here. Snapping your damn photos, I got diabetes!
Anyway, look, if you have got diabetes, salad's the way to go, I think. That's one of the...
If you have diabetes, Wilfred Brimley's going to kick your ass.
There you go. I couldn't start a segment about Wilfred Brimley and not play that classic exchange between Craig Ferguson and Jeffrey Peterson. So, Wilfred Brimley, I knew this first fact I knew. Wilford is his middle name. And here's how I knew this. You know how I knew this? I didn't know what his first name was, but I knew Wilford was his middle name because, two crazy things about him. He's in The Thing. He's in John Carpenter's The Thing. Two little facts about that. He's mustacheless in The Thing, which is very unusual. When you think Wilford Brimley, you think mustache. He has no mustache, and he's billed as A. Wilfred Brimley. A. period. Wilfred Brimley. Not A. He's a Wilfred Brimley. It's A. Wilfred Brimley. He was born in Salt Lake City in 1934. Anthony is his first name. Anthony Wilfred Brimley moved to California with his parents when he was just 6 years old. He elected to drop out of high school so he could join the Marines, serving for 3 years before returning to civilian life. As a ranch hand and a horse wrangler. Those skills eventually came in handy when Westerns became a popular television genre, and Brimley often found work as an extra or a background player. He got screen billing. Brimley initially used his real name, Anthony, or Tony, instead of his middle name, Wilford. Tony Brimley. He doesn't look like a Tony, does he?
He does not.
He looks like a Wilford. So there you go. But that's the only time I'd have to look back now. I haven't seen any of these earlier TV shows that he was in. But I'd love to see the billing on those. Anthony Brimley or Tony Brimley. But yeah, in The Thing, the opening credits, he is A. Wilfred Brimley. How about this? Another fact about character actor Wilfred Brimley. And we're going to jump into conversations about... those great character actors, you go, I don't know that guy's name, but I've seen him in 9 million movies. Robert Duvall got him into acting. While working as a horse riding extra, Brimley became friendly with actor Robert Duvall and was encouraged by Duvall to try his hand at more substantial parts. He always was really encouraging, Brimley said, of the Oscar-winning actor in 2014. He always had been marvelous. He was a marvelous example of honesty and integrity. The two appeared on screen together in 1982's Tender Mercies, about a country singer played by Robert Duvall trying to reconnect with his daughter. Brimley played his agent and also met his future wife during that production. Wonder how he's billed for that, because that's the same year. Tender Mercies was the same year as The Thing. So maybe he's billed as A. Wilford Brimley in that, too, because they both came out in 1982. Maybe he's billed as A. Wilford Brimley in that. The Thing came out first, because The Thing was in the summer. The Thing came out in the summer of 1982, and I believe Tender Mercies came out in the fall. So maybe that, by that point, he dropped the A. I'm not really sure. Hey, Dan, can you look that up on IMDb?
He is listed as Wilford. I'm trying to pull up like the beginning of the movie to see if it's different, and I'm not seeing anything.
Because IMDb will tell you what he was listed as. Do they say what he was listed as in The Thing? Yeah. As A. Wilford Brimley?
He's listed as Wilford Brimley on the IMDb list.
Oh, he is?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. So Tender Mercies. He was not, but for Tender Mercies, he's not billed as Tony Brimley. We know that much. Listen to this. He was a bodyguard for Howard Hughes. This is Wilford Brimley we're talking about. Before getting work as a stuntman and actor, Brimley worked as a bodyguard for aviator-turned-recluse Howard Hughes. But the actor is rarely open to discussing Hughes, a famously reclusive man in his later years. He was a good guy, Brimley once said of his former employer. The job came in part through Brimley's membership in the Church of Jesus Christ of Mormon of Latter-day Saints. Hughes reportedly preferred to employ Mormons as he liked that they didn't drink or smoke and they rarely talked. I did not know that Wilford Brimley was a Mormon. These are things that I'm learning. This is the whole point of talking. The whole point of this world is to learn more about Wilford Brimley. Here's the next little fact about Wilford Brimley. He did not train to be an actor. Brimley's genuine demeanor didn't come to him through any kind of method approach. He was never formally trained as an actor, choosing instead to draw upon his decades and self-possessed lean years working various jobs like being a horseman and a bartender before getting his break in 1979's The China Syndrome. Oh, that's right. He's in The China Syndrome. And he's terrific in that movie. Yeah, he's got a mustache in that one. I wonder why he didn't have a mustache in The Thing. Oh, he's great in The China Syndrome. Oh, yeah. Training? He asked a reporter rhetorically in 1984. I've never been to acting classes, and I've had 50 years of training. My years as an extra were a good background for learning about camera techniques and so forth. Basically, my method is to be honest. Yeah. That China Syndrome, man, that's a good movie. If you guys have not seen The China Syndrome, that is a really terrific movie. Jane Fonda, Michael Douglas, Jack Lemmon. It's about a meltdown at a nuclear power plant that is captured on video by these news people led by Jane Fonda. And Jack Lemmon plays an employee of the plant, and so does Wilford Brimley. He plays an employee of the plant as well. And he's got a major moment in the movie at the end. Wilford Brimley's got like a major, major moment in the movie. If you've not seen China Syndrome, it's fantastic. It came out in 1978 or 79, early 1979. And it came out, and that's the plot of the movie is, you know, this horrible nuclear disaster that could happen, this meltdown could happen. And the timing of the release of the movie was amazing because the China Syndrome came out, and that was the plot of the movie. That's what it was about, was a possible nuclear meltdown and disaster at a power plant. And I don't know if you guys remember, I mean, you know, if you weren't around, but Three Mile Island happened right after the movie came out. So, you know, the movie was released, and 2 weeks later, Three Mile Island happened. And then the box office for the movie, you know, it was already doing pretty well at the box office. But when Three Mile Island actually happened in real life, the box office went through the roof. And The China Syndrome became a massive hit. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Jack Lemmon got nominated for Best Actor. He's great in it. He's just great in it. But that's a really good movie. And Brimley's terrific in it. I totally forgot. It's not a huge role. He plays a co-worker of Lemmon's and a friend of Lemmon's. It's not a huge role, but it's a real integral role. And at the end of the movie, he's got like one of the best moments in the entire movie. I totally forgot he was in that. I can't believe I forgot that. So All right, we're talking more about Wilford Brimley, and then we're going to talk about other character actors, people that you see on screen and go, oh, I know that guy. You can't remember their name. Some of the best character actors of all time. We'll do that, and more facts about Wilford Brimley coming up. Anytime you want to jump in with a talk or text, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You mean Wild Card Wednesday? And if you want to make a request, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That is also the number to call or text if you want to talk about character actors. Who are your favorite character actors? You know, those guys that show up in movies. You see them everywhere. You know their faces. They've been in a million things. You kind of maybe don't know their name. And we'll talk about some of the best ones. And we're talking about Wilford Brimley right now. And Sharon requested that for Wildcard Wednesday. It's Johnny Clegg, King of Time, which sums Sharon's feelings about the Cubs. All right. Welcome back, everybody. And let's get back to it. We've been talking about Wilford Brimley, or Tony Brimley, as his friends are apt to call him. He's one of those distinctive and great faces that you see in movies, and maybe people don't remember his name, but he's a great character actor. And let's see, how about this next one? Here's some more facts about Wilford Brimley. He enjoys mooning people. Oh, that's lovely. He enjoys mooning people. While Brimley's on-screen presence is normally one of sedate wisdom, the actor is not averse to showing his buttocks if the timing is right. Speaking with the Chicago Tribune in 1988, actor Steve Guttenberg, Brimley's co-star in the Cocoon movies, mentioned that Brimley sometimes mooned people on set. The biggest fun I had on the Cocoon shoot was when Wilford Brimley would moon the audience or the camera, Steve Guttenberg said. He has a running contest with Robert Duvall to see who can moon the most people at one time. Duvall has the record. He drove through a town when it was having a parade and mooned 2,000 people, but Wilford isn't giving up. You know, there are some really crazy stories about the mooning epidemic that happened on the set of The Godfather. And it was all led by Duvall. All led by Duvall. So Duvall is, I mean, Duvall's got this incredible reputation of just like pulling his pants down all the time. And everybody else on the set, see, you know, it was funny because like sometimes he's the only person on the set. I wonder if he mooned people on the set of Widows, which is coming out in a few weeks. But anyway, he's been, you know, he's legendary for mooning people, Duvall. And there are unbelievable stories that James Caan tells, that Pacino tells, about the incredible amount of mooning that went on. And it wasn't Duvall. Duvall led the mooning. He's the one who started it all. But Brando got in on it. James Caan got in on it. Pacino didn't. But like the cast members in a lot of the cast members in The Godfather, just, you know, imagine shooting this, you know, this classic, epic, you know, Academy Award winning movie that is widely considered to be one of the greatest movies of all time, and 80% of the shoot, people were taking their pants off. Yeah, man. So we got some people who are texting in with their favorite character actors, we'll get to that in a minute. And let's see. He surprised an elementary school class. While shooting a film in Louisiana in 1990, Brimley struck up a friendship with Elizabeth Landman, the then 9-year-old daughter of the set's food caterer. When Landman returned to school to tell her friends at St. Joseph's Catholic School that she met the man from Cocoon, nobody believed her, so Brimley decided to boost her credibility by visiting the school unannounced one day to sign autographs and answer questions about his career. That's pretty cool. Hey, I met the guy from Cocoon. No, you didn't. And then Wilford Brimley shows up. How you doing? He is not opposed to a cockfight. What? What? In 1998, Brimley attended a rally in Phoenix, Arizona to oppose a statewide ban on cockfighting, an often illegal practice that sees bettors wager on the outcome of a fight to the death between roosters equipped with razors on their feet. The actor argued that the law would be a slippery slope, one eventually leading to a ban on hunting dogs. He also said that while he lived in Utah, he visited Arizona to attend competitions. I'm trying to protect the lifestyle of freedom and choice for my grandchildren. He said the activity was eventually outlawed in Arizona in 2007. Well, that's crazy. Would eventually lead a ban on hunting dogs, not hunting actual dogs, but hunting dogs, dogs that you take when you go hunting. Not he doesn't go around hunting dogs. How about this? Brimley can sing. Oh, I would love to get an album by Wilford Brimley. Wouldn't that be quite a coup? Though he never made a thing about it, quote-unquote, he proclaimed that he was not a great singer. Brimley had a passion for covering popular music. In the 1990s, the actor performed at a Los Angeles area clubs after rehearsing with pianist Bob Smale and bassist Don Bagley for 2 years. By the way, he sang on Ferguson Show like 4 or 5 times. He released a couple of albums. He sang on Ferguson Show, I remember.
I have it if you want.
Oh, yeah, okay, cool. Okay, let's hear it.
Nothing's impossible. I have found, for when my chin is on the ground, I pick myself up, dust myself off, start over again. Don't lose your confidence if you slip. Be grateful for a pleasant trip and pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again. Work like a soul inspired.
Yeah. The battle of the day. I remember watching that live. So, Wilford Brimley, man, he can sing. he performed My Funny Valentine, It Had to Be You, and All the Things You Are, among other hits. Later made appearances on the Jerry Lewis Telethon, the Ill-Fated Pet Sajak Show, and also, as we heard, from Craig Ferguson's show, too. He recorded a number of albums when he agreed to hit the Cal State Northridge for a jazz endowment benefit in 93. Joel Leach, the school's jazz band director, said that Brimley had a warm, rich voice. Brimley offered to do the benefit for free and even left the filming of The Firm in order to appear. He got into a feud with Yoda while shooting the 1997 feature In-N-Out. Brimley was said to have gotten upset with director Frank Oz. Oz, a performer who operated voiced Yoda in several Star Wars movies, told an interviewer that Brimley is one of the three actors who hates my guts. The other two were Marlon Brando and Cher. Neither Oz nor Brimley have ever elaborated on what transpired between the two that caused the rift. And then finally, he's active on Twitter. When he takes only sporadic acting roles these days, Brimley isn't completely unplugged from the public. He has a verified Twitter account on which Brimley, or an authorized representative, tweets inspirational quotes and occasionally takes notes on his contemporary status. Recently, Brimley responded to an observation that action star Tom Cruise is 56. And 5 years older than Brimley was when he played a geriatric on Cocoon. He said, "It's still hard for me to believe," Brimley wrote. Everything you needed to know about Wilford Brimley, right there. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to widespread it out to great character actors. Who are the best? 312-981-7200. News is up next. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It is Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday, baby blue? And that is any artist, any song, anything. Get them in at 312-981-7200. 847 area code requesting the UFO TV theme song. Okay, the UFO TV theme song. And also we want to thank the 262 area code who told us that it was the Irish Rovers who live in Canada. That's right, the Irish Rovers. The Irish Rovers are Canadian. All right. We are talking about character actors. You know their faces. You know these guys. And you can't, maybe you don't know their names, but they've been in 7,000 movies. And they are kind of the core of movie acting. These are the unsung heroes of a lot of great movies. So we got some texts that have come in. 847 area code says Harry Dean Stanton, John Cazale, and Strother Martin. All three perfect examples of fantastic character actors. Harry Dean Stanton is one of those guys that shows up in a ton of movies. He was one of the best, one of the best. John Cazale only made 5 movies. He passed away at a very young age. But this is his resume. Dan, you're aware of John Cazale's resume.
I am, yes.
He was only in 5 movies, and he died at a young age. He had cancer. But these are the 5 movies that John Cazale, these are the 5 movies that John Cazale was in. Just think about this for a moment. These are the 5 movies that John Cazale was in. The Godfather, The Conversation, The Godfather Part 2, Dog Day Afternoon, The Deer Hunter. One of the perhaps the greatest filmography ever. And you know, I mean, he passed away at very young. But those are the 5 movies. Godfather, Godfather Part 2, The Conversation, Dog Day Afternoon, and The Deer Hunter. And he was a great actor. Strother Martin. Oh, Strother Martin. Strother Martin, fantastic character actor. A lot of people remember him from Cool Hand Luke. He's the guy who had the famous line, "What we got here is a failure to communicate." But he is also, he also plays Chong's dad in Up in Smoke. And he's only in one scene. He's only in one scene. It's one of my favorite scenes in movie history. It's the beginning of the movie, and it's an absolutely ridiculous and hilarious scene. And the fact that he was cast as Chong's father in Up in Smoke is ridiculous. And I remember we were talking about Strother Martin years ago on the show, and someone called up and said, you know who I like? I like Chong's dad. The Strother Martin who, you know, has had a major career starring in a ton of movies and a lot of Westerns and some classic movies as well, was just reduced to Chong's dad by one of the listeners who called up, "Yeah, that guy, Chong's dad." 574 area code says, my 3 top character actors are Ernest Borgnine, William Hurt, and Neil McDonough. William Hurt? I think William Hurt's more of a leading man. I mean, he plays a lot of varying characters. Now as he's gotten older, maybe he's fallen into the, now that he's at the age that he's at and he's gotten older, I think he has fallen into the character actor category. No question about it. So, but I think he started out as a leading man, William Hurt. Ernest Borgnine, character actor, no question about it. And Neil McDonough, he's a great actor, too. 301 area code says, I watch a lot of older movies on TCM, and one actor who I am always curious about seems to show up constantly in so many things is Walter Sandy. He was in everything from Bad Day at Black Rock to the Boston Blackie B films of the 40s. Yeah, some of the older guys. All right. So I've got here from Taste of Cinema, the list of the 30 greatest character actors in Hollywood history. So let's talk about these guys. Coming up first here is William Fichter. Now, you might not know William Fichter. You might not know his name. But beginning in the 1990s in movies like The Perfect Storm and then moving into 2000's Pearl Harbor and Black Hawk Down, Fichter's pleasant face and amiable attitude made him the perfect friend, cohort, or wingman. In 2005, he went somewhat against type to play Captain Naur, the leader of the guards in the remake of The Longest Yard. And in 2008, he was a bank manager in the massive hit The Dark Knight. He's done a number of TV shows as well. Terrific actor, William Fichter. He's also a regular on Mom. He plays the wheelchair-bound love interest to Allison Janney in Mom. That's the guy. Now, so if you know his face. Interesting side note, Dan.
Yes.
My friend Matt O'Neill, who is an actor who has appeared in many things. Matt O'Neill was in The Dark Knight. He and my friend William Smiley, William Sandy Smiley, are 2 of the clowns at the beginning of the movie who are doing the bank heist.
Ah.
And it was really funny. Matt was telling me how weird it was, like when The Dark Knight came out, because that came out in the summer of 2008, it freaked him out a little bit that during Halloween of 2008, he saw people dressed up like him.
That has to be pretty surreal.
He thought it was pretty cool. I mean, I was like, that's awesome, man. And, you know, because there were 4 different clown masks, and they each had a different character name. I can't remember what his name was. Little fact here to tie it into this. My friend Matt O'Neill, who was one of the clowns, gets shot in the back by William Fichter. He's the clown that gets shot in the back with the shotgun.
Ah.
That's Matt O'Neill. You never see his face in the movie, but that's him. And he said William Fichter was awesome.
That's cool.
Really,
that's
really, really, really cool dude. And you know, you got to hang out with him because, you know, the setup for this for all that took like a bunch of days to film that sequence. And it's the only sequence he's in. He's in the, but it's like one of the coolest scenes in the entire movie is that the opening bank robbery scene. And yeah, he gets shot in the back by William Fichter. He met Heath Ledger and he said Heath Ledger was a really cool dude. It was great working with him because they're all in the right. van together at the beginning. So, but yeah, William Fichter, he's terrific. He's a great guy. He was, you know what he's great in? He was the blind dude who worked with Jodie Foster in Contact.
Yeah.
He's good, man. He's one of those guys. He's 30, number 30 on this list. He's one of those solid guys that really fits into the category, without question fits into the category of great character actor. So, all right, let's see. Let's go to Rich on WGN. Hey, Rich.
Good morning, Nick. How are you doing?
All right, what's up?
I tripled that on William Fichtner. He's an awesome actor. He was great in Space Cowboys.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he was really good in that. I had two actors that popped into my head that were character. Would you consider Robert Ryan a character actor?
To some extent, yeah. I mean, he was a leading man, but he did a lot of good character work. So I think he would.
What popped in my mind, especially with him, was from 30 Dozen when he was Colonel. He was just angry, and everything Lee Marvin did pissed him off.
Yeah.
And, he was great in that. Now, the other one, I don't know the name of the guy, but I'm sure you probably know who I'm talking about. He was in a whole bunch of, at least three or four, like Gladiator Roman kind of movies that were in the 60s. And he always played like Caesar or one of like the senators with ivy on his head, and he'd be eating grapes and he'd be in a robe. He was in Spartacus. He was in, I think Ben-Hur, and he had kind of a almost like an English accent. Can you picture who I'm talking about?
That's a tough one to figure out with that description, because there are a lot of guys who starred in those movies. Maybe it'll ring in with somebody on that one. Rich, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join on. Next on this list is James Hong. James Hong, who was a reliable go-to Asian-American actor. He was seen frequently in both films and TV, particularly in the 80s and 90s in such films as Blade Runner, Tango and Cash. He was prominently featured as the butler in Chinatown and again in the ill-fated sequel, The Two Jakes. How do you not mention Big Trouble in Little China?
That is a good point.
He's low pan. Come on now. They mentioned Tango and Cash, a movie that we analyzed quite well. But come on, man. He's low pan. Hong's deadpan approach was particularly hilarious in the Chinese restaurant episode of Seinfeld in 1991. Have you seen that episode, Dan?
I have, yes.
He's just like 5-10 minutes. the great Pete Postlewaite, man. That guy was the man. He was the man. Postlewaite, the pock-faced British actor, appeared mostly on TV until his memorable turn as Kobayashi in the 1995 film The Usual Suspects. After that, Postlewaite appeared frequently in films, often as a heavy or a tough guy. Sadly, Postlewaite passed away in 2011 at the age of 64 from cancer. Yeah, you know what else? What other ones Postlewaite was in? His last movie was The Town, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're right.
The Ben Affleck movie. That was his last movie. But, man, you want to see Postlewaite. You want to see a Postlewaite performance in The Name of the Father, the Daniel Day-Lewis movie. Oh, my God, is he good in that. So good. Yaphet Kotto, fantastic actor. Born in 1939, Yaphet Kotto appeared mostly on TV until his performance as the evil Kananga in the 1973 James Bond film Live and Let Die. He has also appeared, he had high profile appearances. Kotto didn't play only a bad guys, but he appeared in Richard Pryor and Harvey Keitel in the comedy Blue Collar's not a comedy, dude. It's not a comedy. Blue Collar's a very serious drama. It's not a comedy. He played the heroic detective Harry Lowes in The Star Chamber. He also appeared in the original Alien as Parker, rounding out a great ensemble cast. That also included Harry Dean Stanton in that movie. Since the 80s, he's gone on to play a variety of roles in both films and television, often portraying policemen or authority figures. You know, listen, hold on a second. First of all, Blue Collar's not a comedy. They left out Lo Pan. Okay? And they don't mention him in Midnight Run. Yaphet Kotto. He's Alonzo Mosley. I'm Mosley! Yeah, what's going on here? I'm going to write to these people at Taste of Cinema and tell them, have you not seen Big Trouble in Little China? Blue Collar's not funny. It's funny moments in it, but it's not a comedy. And what the hell, why would you leave out Midnight Run? Alonzo Mosley, legendary character. You've seen Midnight Run, right, Dan?
I have not.
Oh!
You okay?
Yeah, I'm just a little shocked.
Sounded like you pulled something there.
I may have. I don't know. That's one of those movies that's...
You're going to have to get a waterbed.
You know... You know, Dan, that's like one of my top remote droppers.
Yes.
I mean, I've seen that movie a million times. It is just one of my favorites. So, all right. Well, let's get back. We'll get back to this in a second. We got some texts coming in. If you want to join in, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And let's see, as we go along reading this article, see how many more credits they miss when describing the actor. Character actors is the topic. 312-981-7200. Is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here till 5 o'clock, and it is Wildcard Wednesday. You may welcome with the Wednesday. And, yeah, any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Paul requested the band The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. Classic song. How are you, everybody? We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell coming up. Steve Cochran with your morning drive at 6. And coming up, the stories that matter. With Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
All right.
We are talking about character actors and some of the best character actors ever, some of the most memorable ones. Some of the times you don't know their names, but they're usually like the core of a good movie, and they very rarely get the kind of attention and praise that they deserve. And we got a whole bunch of people who have texted in. And we're talking about an article that was written about the 30 best character actors in Hollywood history from Taste of Cinema, where they keep out some very important credits from these guys. But we'll get back to that. But let's see a couple of texts here. 479, Brian James. Brian James, he was a great character actor. Great character actor. He was in Blade Runner. He was in Southern Comfort. He was in Fifth Element. He was a terrific actor. Terrific actor. He played Leon in Blade Runner. He's the first replicant that you see in the movie. He's the one given the test about the tortoise being on its back at the beginning of the movie. He's the one who says to Harrison Ford, "Time to die." Such a great movie. All 27 versions of it. Don Calfa, you want to talk about a guy with a mug. You know, Dan, this is one of those guys. You should look him up, and you'll know him immediately, because he's been in a million things, but nobody knows his name. Don Calfa, C-A-L-F-A. He's been in a ton of stuff, and he's got he's one of these guys.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you know, as soon as you see, he's got those sunken eyes, you know what I mean? And he's great. You know what, my favorite performance of his is in Revenge of the, Return of the Living Dead, the punk rock zombie movie. He's fantastic in that movie. He was also great in The Star Chamber, which was mentioned for Yaphet Kotto. He's in The Star Chamber, too. And then you got James Hong, another listener mentioning James Hong, who, by the way, was Lo Pan for the people at that website. I just want to make sure that you know that. 312 area code says, best Western character actor has to be Jack Elam. Every Western movie or TV Western had the bad guy, Jack Elam. Jack Elam was in a million Westerns. He's another one of these guys, Dan. That guy's got a mug and some eyes. You look at Jack Elam's eyes. Can you pull him up on the? It's E-L-A-M. Elam. E-L-A-M. Jack Elam.
Oh boy.
Yeah. 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 He was in Cannonball Run. He played a doctor in Cannonball Run. Legendary character actor, and yes, appeared mostly in Westerns, but. Mike from Novak Construction. Hi, Mike from Novak Construction. What would be the... are they going to decorate for Halloween? You guys, Mike, when are you going to put your Halloween stuff up? Maybe we'll see it on the way home.
Yeah, maybe that's why he's up early. Well, he's always up early.
He's always up early.
Yeah.
He picks M. Emmett Walsh, speaking of Blade Runner. A classic character actor, M. Emmett Walsh, who has given a ton of great performances. Including he's so good in Blood Simple. He's phenomenal in that movie. But he's good. He's another one of these guys that you put him in anything and he's fantastic. And then Kathleen Freeman were my favorite character actors. This whole list is guys, though, right?
It is guys.
Because yeah. Kathleen Freeman, fantastic character actress. And, you know, she worked with all the time, Dan.
Who's that?
Who basically, like, her comedy partner in, I believe it's 7 movies? Jerry Lewis.
Ah.
She was his foil in a lot of movies. And she, you know, he loved her, man. He wrote parts for her. You know, in a bunch of movies, and she was hilarious. Kathleen Freeman was great.
Mine is actually a woman. Her name is Jane Atkinson.
Okay,
and she hasn't been on movies a lot, but it's kind of funny because you start to realize that the shows you watch are also the shows that the people who of other shows you watch, you know, like there's like a cross.
Yeah,
cross contamination because she was like on 24, and then a whole bunch of character actors from 24 were on the USA show. I forget what it's called, it Piper Perabo or whatever it was called. Eileen watched it a lot.
Yeah,
but so she was on that, and then she was on Madam Secretary, and you know all these shows that Eileen's watched, and it was always kind of fun because she would just pop up randomly,
right.
Like in a scene, and I'm like, oh, it's her, and I honestly did not know her name up until you know I'm like, oh, who's that lady that is always in those things?
Yeah,
and Jane Atkinson.
Her name is Jane Atkinson.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right. Where are we going next? Here is John Turturro. On the list, he's number 25. Turturro appeared in small parts, but he grabbed a lead in the Coen Brothers film Barton Fink. Though the film flopped, his reputation has grown since Turturro continued to appear frequently in their films. Turturro's interesting looks and bombastic style have made him the classic contemporary character actor, and his extensive resume reflects his status. Barton Fink, still my favorite Coen Brothers movie. I know it's not a real popular choice, but it's absolutely my favorite Coen Brothers movie. Turturro's great in everything. And a very cool dude. I met him. He made a movie, directed a movie. He's directed a few movies, but he directed an autobiographical movie about him and his relationship between he and his father called Mac. And I moderated his Q&A. They did a screening at the Biograph Theater. That's how long ago it was. They did a screening at the Biograph Theater, and they asked me to do to host it and do the Q&A afterwards. And a really, really, really nice guy. Really nice guy. And he plays a lot of characters who aren't nice. That's the thing about John Turturro. In To Live and Die in L.A., he's in To Live and Die in L.A. You could just go on and on the movies that he's in. And not to mention, you know, all the Coen Brothers. He's in, like, a ton of Coen Brothers movies. He's Jesus in The Big Lebowski, where he licks the bowling ball. I love the fact that his teammate, the Big Lebowski is just it's so layered with ridiculous detail comedy. I love the fact that his partner's name, the bowling partner's name is Liam, and he doesn't look like a Liam at all. He's a big chubby dude with a bad mustache, and his name is Liam. And I don't know, it's one of those details that just kills me about that movie. But Turturro, Do the Right Thing. He's so good in Do the Right Thing, and he's a jerk in Do the Right Thing. Racist jerk, but he's really good in it. Next here, Elijah Cook Jr., legendary. This is another guy that you probably don't know his name, but he's been in 9,000 movies. Emerging on the scene since the 30s, Elijah Cook Jr.'s diminutive stature regulated him to character parts, including the gunman Wilmer in the Maltese Falcon. He was in The Big Sleep. He was in Shane. He was in a lot of TV shows in the 60s and 70s, and westerns like Gunsmoke, shows like Beretta. He's in 1941, the Steven Spielberg movie. He's in he's in one scene in 1941, a very, very funny scene at the beginning of the movie in a diner. Oh, no, yeah, they're in a diner, and John Belushi shoots the radio. And Elijah Cook Jr. is like, I heard it on that radio right there. And he's got food hanging off of his fork. And Belushi shoots over his head and blows up the radio and freaks out Elijah Cook Jr. So, I've been talking too much about Elijah Cook Jr. The news is in 8 seconds. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on this Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, Wildcard Wednesday, blah, blah, blah. That means any artist, any song, anything. 815 area code requests the Mills Brothers. Till then. And, so we're here till 5. It's Wednesday morning. And I slept about 6 minutes yesterday. So this is the last hour of the show. I might get a little loopy, Dan.
Yeah.
Just a little. I'm not really sure. But I didn't get a lot of sleep before my Phantasm screening last night. And again, I want to thank everybody for coming out. We had a really, really great turnout, and I'm very happy about that, considering that the Cubs played their one and out wild card game, and we had a really big crowd in the theater. So I want to thank everybody for coming out. Phantasm, great movie, one of my favorite movies of all time. Lots of people had never seen it before. And we watched it, beautiful 4K restoration print of it, and it was great. It was great to see the movie again for the millionth time for me, and then talk about it with everybody afterwards. And then we all kind of gathered together in the bar, which is in the lobby of the upstairs theater at the AMC Movieco. About 25 of us, after the movie ended, came out and watched starting from the bottom of the ninth of the game, which we didn't know was going to go on for, another 9 hours. So, but thank you so much for coming out, and I just want to again remind everybody that our next screening is our tribute to the late great Burt Reynolds, who we just lost recently, and we are showing on November 13th. We do it the first Tuesday of each month, but the first Tuesday of November is Election Day, so we're gonna not have a screening on election night. But on November 13th, we are going to screen The Longest Yard. The original Longest Yard with Burt Reynolds, which is one of his best and most entertaining movies and one of the quintessential Burt Reynolds movies of the 70s. A really, really great movie about basically a bunch of prisoners who are going to play a football game against the guards. Robert Aldridge directed it. You want to talk about character actors. Oh, my God. The Longest Yard has 8 million characters. Dan, can you look up Longest Yard on IMDb? And go through some of the names. Eddie Albert's in it. Why am I blanking on
Ed Lauder?
Ed Lauder. Oh, come on, yeah. Ed Lauder. Ed Lauder. You know what? Scott Oaken and I would do imitations of Ed Lauder, and we were known to do imitations of Ed Lauder. If you want to do Ed Lauder, if you want to do an imitation of Ed Lauder, Dan, if you're interested.
Yes, I do. I can't believe you've been holding back this information.
Make sort of a mean look on your face and hike up your pants a lot.
that is Ed Lauder.
That's our Ed Lauder. He's passed away too, right?
I believe he has.
He was the best. All right, who else is in that? Because, listen, we're talking about character actors. You want to see some major character actors? Come out to AMC Rosemont on November 13th. Let's see who else.
Michael Conrad,
another great one. Mm-hmm. He was on Hill Street Blues.
That's right. James Hampton.
James Hampton has been in a bunch of Burt Reynolds movies, and I believe also appeared as a regular on Evening Shade. And he plays Preacher. In the movie, if I'm not mistaken.
And most importantly, Michael J. Fox's dad in Teen Wolf.
Yeah. Who was his dad in Teen Wolf? I don't even remember.
James Hampton.
Oh, James Hampton was his dad in Teen Wolf?
Yep.
Okay, I've only seen that movie once.
For shame.
Yeah.
Harry Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
John Steadman. Charles Tyner.
Charles Tyner is one of those guys, you look at his face and you go, uh-oh. Yeah. It's all a bunch of incredible. And then Michael, who ended up in Smokey and the Bandit, he played
Mike Henry.
That's it. He played Gleason's idiot son in Smokey and the in Smokey and the Bandit. Another one of those guys who's been like a kind of a semi regular in Burt Reynolds movies. And Eddie Albert plays the warden. And it's weird because he's a real... who else is in it? Bernadette Peters is in the movie.
She is, yes.
But Eddie Albert, mostly known as Green Acres, you know, doing comedy in Green Acres. He's horrifying in the Longest Yard. He's a total bastard in that movie. So there you go. Another celebration of character actors will be happening at the Movie Co. Theater on November 13th. I'll be hosting a screening of The Longest Yard. A really, truly great movie. Truly great movie. A bunch of texts are coming in. Let's consider here. 708 area code, what about your friend Tobolowski as a character actor? He's one of the best character actors in the, of all time. Stephen Tobolowski, man, he's the man. And he's in everything. Again, you know, he's got five. If you ever go to Stephen Tobolowski's IMDb page, prepare to scroll for 3 hours. 815 area code, Scatman Crothers was so underrated. Yeah. Yeah. And as I've said before, a complete waste of time in The Shining. Guy takes 15 different flights, goes through a blizzard, gets like a tractor trailer, a snow plow. Travels across the country, 5 different flights, takes him 9 years to get there, walks in the front door, axe to the chest, dead. I always just, every time I see The Shining, I'm like, man, this dude wasted so much time and effort to walk into the Overlook Hotel and 2 seconds later get a hatchet to the chest. 773 area code, Peter Ustinov. Kathy says, Jack Hawkins may be the best actor who I'm thinking of. The actor that the other guy was thinking of, that the listener was thinking of. He was in Ben-Hur and many other movies. Jack Hawkins, the person who was trying to think of the name of the guy who appeared in a lot of Gladiator movies. Tim says, my two favorite character actors are Louis Guzman and Danny Trejo. Both terrific. Louis Guzman is one of my favorites. Louis Guzman is I love that guy. Danny Trejo is great, too, but he's kind of pigeonholed. Danny Trejo is always, you know, I mean, by the way he looks. Tony, James Caron. Tony says James Caron. James Caron, great actor. You would recognize him. He's in Wall Street. He's been in a bunch of stuff. John C. McGinley. John C. McGinley, you know, probably best known as what was his name on Scrubs?
Dr. Cox.
Oh, there he is. Yeah, see him. William Sadler. William Sadler, fantastic character actor. He was Death in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and he was in Trespass and a bunch of other stuff. And Dick Miller. Dick Miller. Oh, please. Dick Miller has been in 9 million movies. He's in all of Joe Dante's movies. 815 area code says, hey, William Fichter starred on As the World Turns. He played a stable boy. Oh, my God. It's kind of amazing how many people got their start on soap operas, you know?
Oh, sure.
You know, Julianne Moore. I'm trying to remember which one she was on. Julianne Moore got her start on a soap opera. And I can't remember. I think it might have been As the World Turns as well. I can't remember. 773 area code, Michael Jeter. Michael Jeter, who starred with Burt Reynolds on Evening Shade. Terrific character actor. He was fantastic in The Fisher King. Michael Jeter was so good in The Fisher King. So, yeah. All right, next here, they discuss Brian Dennehy, the great Brian Dennehy. Speaking of Cocoon... Tough and stout, Brian Dennehy was a perfect character actor to play cops, tough guys, and gangsters. He was born in 1938. Dennehy didn't really make his mark until the 1980s, appearing in TV series like Cagney and Lacey and Dynasty. By the mid-1980s, he was seen most notably in the thrillers FX and Legal Eagles. Legal Eagles? You're going to bring up Legal Eagles? They bring up Legal Eagles, but they don't bring up Cocoon. How do you not? Who wrote this?
Who wrote it?
Who wrote it?
That's an old clip. That's the back.
Yeah, that's an old like first time I went online and looked at videos clip because it was this wacky weatherman. I wonder if we have that clip because we were looking through some clips. Let me see. These things are so small; it's hard for me to read. Oh, it's got to be that. That's the only page we have. Let's see. We have that. What is that? I don't think we have that one, but we do have this.
Who cares?
Is under Wacky Weatherman? Wait, here.
Who wrote it?
There it is. Because it was this Wacky Weatherman. Here's it.
If the talent coach that comes to Fox Charlotte. This is his idea of the way I should do the weather. No kidding, no lie, seriously. Not my idea, his idea. 5, 6, 7, 8. Kickball chains, kickball chains, kickball chains, kickball chains. 5, 6, 7, 8. Give the weather, give the weather, give the weather. Sell it, Mark!
I can't remember the guy's name, but we had him on the air because Andy and I just love this guy. He was a weatherman. I can't remember what city, but people thought he was drunk, and he wasn't drunk. He was just a loon.
Hot in here. I'm taking off all my clothes. That's a song.
What's this one?
We got rain and thunder.
Oh, this is when he's playing drums.
What's the drum?
Okay, that goes on for another 25 seconds. But this is what we were looking for here.
Who wrote it?
And then this one?
Yeah. That was the worst poem I have ever heard in my life.
We didn't write it.
Who wrote it?
There we go.
Mark Mathis.
He was the best, man.
You interviewed him, I believe, on the debut of the 6-hour Saturday night show. Or it was some big show.
Oh, God.
And you guys brought out all the stops, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, because I found him online. Somebody sent it to me. This was like the early days of you know, like this was like pre-YouTube. This was like 2004, around that time. 2004, maybe 2005. And he did drink.
I think he said that was when he was.
Yeah, that was when he was drinking. He's not drinking anymore. That's right. When we had him on, he was sober, but he was drinking, and the result was these insane clips of him doing the weather. Mark Mathis. Wow, you remembered who wrote it.
I shout that out every once in a while.
No, do you really?
In my head,
you just keep that one with you, huh?
Yep,
that was pretty cool. All right. Let's take a break here for the weather, and then we'll come back and talk more character actors. We'd love to hear from you. Call or text at 312-981-7200. Wild Card Wednesday continues, and that's Peter and Decatur's request, Blind Faith with Can't Find My Way Home. Yeah, Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yeah. Hey, we're back. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we are talking about great character actors. There's an article that was written about the 30 greatest character actors in Hollywood history from Taste of Cinema website. And we've been talking a little bit about that. And you guys have been reminiscing about your favorite character actors. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. And here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Morning, Nick.
Morning.
I was going to say one of the best ones, he was with Robert Conrad on TV shows, but he also did Westerns also. His name was Red West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Robert Conrad, Chicagoan, from Chicago.
Yeah, he was also a pretty good character actor as well as being a lead on TV. But Red was more like in movies also. And then while I'm thinking of Richard Farnsworth, he was another good character actor as well.
Richard Farnsworth was one of the best. Richard Farnsworth was one of the best quintessential character actors. And one of his last performances was in The Straight Story, and he was absolutely amazing in that movie. Absolutely amazing.
It's actually his family's carried on the business. If you see the credits, it's Diamond Farnsworth. I think it's a relative or his son or his grandson now that does the stunts still on a lot of TV shows and that now.
Very cool. Very, very cool. All right, Tom, thanks, man.
You're welcome.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, thank you, Tom, I think if I'm that Farnsworth got nominated for Best Actor for The Straight Story.
You are correct.
Yeah. God, he was good in that movie. That was such a good movie. And yeah, it was a G-rated movie directed by David Lynch. If you can wrap your mind around that for a second. And again, Harry Dean Stanton. Harry Dean Stanton played his brother in that movie. Such a good movie. All right, here's Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I love this subject, and I wish we could talk up and back for a couple of hours on it. But I love George Sanders, adored him.
Yeah.
And he did a few starring roles, but he mostly supported. And then there's John Quaylen, who started out in the 30s with John Ford and John Wayne. And he played little skinny Swedish guys a lot, and he was a very good actor.
Yeah.
I loved Henry Jones. And Richard Jaco, who were both in 310 to Yuma.
That's right. And Richard Jekyll, Richard Jekyll's another guy who's been in a ton of stuff. He was in Starman, John Carpenter's Starman. He's really good in that.
Yeah. Oh, he was bad.
Yeah,
he was really
terrible. He was a jerk in that movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So, John, what is it? John McIntyre and his wife Jeanette Nolan?
Oh yeah,
who worked together so much? They were wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Paula, thank you for the call.
Thank you for this. Bye. Thank you for this. A great subject.
Okay.
Love it.
Thank you. There's Paula. Well, she knows her character actors. That's cool. All right, next here, they consider in this article, Sam Elliott. I would agree with that. Another frequent cowboy character actor is Sam Elliott, who emerged in the early 70s from a variety of TV roles, and he starred in the 1976 Lifeguard, sans mustache. He returned to cowboy and western parts and TV movies throughout the 80s, but the 90s, he had expanded his range to include films like Tombstone, The Big Lebowski, and The Incredible Hulk, when he played General Ross, the Hulk's nemesis. Known for his deep voice and thick mustache, Elliot has stayed very busy recently, doing a lot of voice work. It's what's beef, it's what's for dinner. Television commercials. Okay. What's one of the major ones that they left out here, Dan? I mean, come on.
Lebowski?
No, they mentioned it. Roadhouse!
Oh, yes.
How do you not mention Roadhouse? He's Dalton. In Roadhouse. No, he's not Dalton. Because Patrick Swayze's Dalton. All right, and then we have Murray Hamilton. Murray Hamilton been in a ton of stuff, but you know, like, obviously best known as the mayor in Jaws. Murray Hamilton is primarily known for roles that he played in two highly significant films. He was born in North Carolina. He started acting in Broadway, gradually making his mark on TV, frequently on Perry Mason and Gunsmoke. He was a TV actor until he had a great part of Mr. Robinson in The Graduate, the 1967 film The Graduate. Hamilton continued to work in TV and films until 1975, when he and it was featured in one of the year's biggest movies, Jaws, as the mayor of Amity. He died young. He died in 1986. But here's the thing about Murray Hamilton. One of my favorite like stupid like posts on online. Was Murray Hamilton was still the mayor of Amity. He was still the mayor of Amity in Jaws 2. That's why elections are so important. After all the stuff that happened in Jaws, he got reelected. He was still the mayor. That's one of my favorite ridiculous posts ever. That's why elections are so important, because he's still the mayor of Amity in Jaws 2. Oh, man, that is funny. All right. Okay, more character actors coming up. We want to hear from you, 312-981-7200. These are kind of, it's a lot of fun to talk about this, but it's also, these are kind of unsung heroes of movies. These are the guys that don't get all the recognition. They certainly don't get a lot of awards. And sometimes people don't even know who they are. You know, you don't even know who some of these character actors are. You never know their names. So we're giving them a little attention and having some fun talking about them right now. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to jump in with us. And we're going to take a break for the news, which is up next, and then more. Welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah. Right here on WGN. It's any artist, any song, anything. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin, requesting Paul Revere and the Raiders, Kicks. Yeah, Paul Revere and the Raiders. You know, and they used to dress up in their costumes, crazy costumes. So, all right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about character actors, great ones that don't get sometimes don't get the credit or the attention that they deserve. We got a bunch of them here that we've been talking about. I want to mention one of my favorites, Dan, that is just, I think, one of the greatest character actors of all time. He also passed away. J.T. Walsh.
Ah, yes.
J.T. Walsh, to me, is the definitive character actor. He was phenomenal. He was so great. He's been in a ton of stuff. J.T. Walsh. He was in The Big Picture. He was in the Grifters. Usually played a bad guy. Most of the time, JT Walsh played a bad guy. But one of my favorite JT Walsh performances is in Breakdown with Kurt Russell and Kathleen Quinlan. Do you remember that movie, Dan? Have you ever seen Breakdown?
I have seen bits and pieces of it.
It's, it's so good. It's so, so good. Kurt Russell, his car breaks down. He and his wife, played by Kathleen Quinlan, car breaks down on the side of the road. And a trucker, played by J.T. Walsh, pulls over and says that he will take Kurt Russell's wife, Kathleen Quinlan, take her someplace to get somebody to come back with the car, to help with the car. And the guy just disappears, and he kidnaps her. J.T. Walsh kidnaps her, and he's got other goons with him. And then it's this cat and mouse game. It's a really great thriller. A really, really, really great thriller. It's one of those movies. It did pretty well at the box office, but it's one of those movies that just really stands out. Like, I mean, I remember the first time I saw it, I was really shocked at how good it was. Like, I didn't expect nothing. I mean, Kurt Russell's in it, so I was automatically going to rule. That just goes without saying. But I didn't expect it to be as good as it was, and as good as it is. That movie rules. I mean, Breakdown is a great movie. If you've never seen it, it's a great, great thriller. Really exciting, really suspenseful, really well made, really well acted, and one of J.T. Walsh's best roles ever. Here's Scott on WGN. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Nick. Hey. J.T. Walsh was also in A Few Good Men.
Yes, he was.
He was one of the upstanding Marines.
Yep. Yes, he was. I mean, he's been in a ton of stuff. I mean, Dan, can you look him up on IMDb? Because we could, you know, there's like a million. He also was in the original. J.T. Walsh was in the original cast on stage of Glengarry Glen Ross. Yeah, he was in the original cast of Glengarry Glen Ross. J.T. Walsh, and he was in House of Games. Speaking of David Mamet, he was often in Mamet stuff. He was one of those. He was one of those great collaborators because Mamet loved. You know, Mamet still loves character actors. He gives character actors a lot of good parts in plays. I mean, Joe Mantegna and William H. Macy are both technically character actors, and they started out with him. So
I don't know if you knew this or Dan said you knew it, but Sam Elliott's going to be in A Star Is Born. He's going to play Bradley Cooper's brother.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, I'm seeing it this weekend.
Have you heard anything about that movie?
I don't want it to be horrible. No,
I hear
nothing but great things about it. Seriously, I have not heard.
Oh, that's good.
I have not heard one negative thing about it. So,
great.
Yeah. All right, Scott, thanks, man.
Okay.
Yeah, the buzz on this movie, Dan. The buzz on A Star Is Born, through the roof.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, through the roof, and it's Bradley Cooper's directorial debut, first movie out of the gate. You know, and everybody is talking Lady Gaga's going to get nominated, easily going to be nominated for Best Actress. He's going to get nominated. It's all over the place.
That's
maybe
awesome.
Sam Elliott will get supporting actor.
Yeah.
And you know who's supposed to be great in it, too? Dave Chappelle.
Really?
It's a serious role.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be really great in it. Andrew Dice Clay is in it.
Wow.
And he's supposed to be great in it, too. I was very hesitant about this movie.
Sure.
You know, because it's the ninth time they've told this story, and this seems to be similar to the version that they did with Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson. It seems that they're taking that angle with it. And it is, of the retellings of A Star Is Born, the one from 76 is the one that's closest to what this is. But, you know, and I've always liked Bradley Cooper, and I, you know, but there was an interview with Sean Penn who saw it in, I guess he saw it in Toronto, and they interviewed Sean Penn, and he says that he goes, I can't remember a better movie that I've seen in I don't know how long.
Wow.
I mean, he called it a masterpiece. He said that everything about the movie was great and that the acting was amazing and that Bradley Cooper is an unbelievable director. And that was Sean Penn, who's grumpy all the time.
Yes.
So, now, what was it, J.T. Walsh?
David Kaplan is a big fan of J.T. Walsh because he also starred in The Negotiator.
He was in The Negotiator.
Flat out phenomenal. Maybe he watched that to cheer himself up after that Cubs loss.
Yeah.
Sling Blade.
Oh, yeah.
Executive Decisions.
Mm-hmm. Kurt Russell.
The Babysitter.
Yeah.
The remake of Miracle on 34th Street.
Oh, he's in that. That's right. I forgot about that.
Blue Chips.
Blue Chips, along with Nick Nolte.
Mm-hmm. Morning Glory.
Mm.
A Few Good Men, as we mentioned.
Right.
Backdraft.
Oh, yeah, Backdraft.
You mentioned The Grifters.
Yeah.
The Big Picture.
Yep. That's the only Christopher Guest-directed movie that I like.
Good Morning Vietnam.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's got a really good part in Good Morning Vietnam. Yeah.
Hannah and Her Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to the beginning of his movie career.
Yeah. Well, he was just one of the best character actors of all time. Anytime I would see his name on the credits of a movie, I'd be like, okay, well, at least one thing about this movie is going to be really good. And now let's get to another one here. He's also made this article. This guy, one of my favorite actors, basically one of my favorite actors of all time, and truly one of the best character actors of all time, who had a pretty monstrous career. And that's Charles Durning. Charles Durning is truly one of my very, very favorite actors ever, and he was an amazing character actor and a war hero. The guy was a war hero. He was just incredible. Somewhat reminiscent of Brian Dennehy, Jack Warden, and Jack Warden is Charles Durning. Jack Warden, another great character actor. A heavyset character actor who played policemen or working class guys beginning in films like The Front Page and Dog Day Afternoon in the 70s. Durning went on to what was probably his best known role as Les, Jessica Lange's father, who had a brief sort of romance with Dorothy Michaels in Tootsie. He was so good in Tootsie. He's heartbreaking in that movie. It's just it's a really sweet and wonderful performance. He also appeared in a lot of Burt Reynolds stuff too. He was on Evening Shade. He was in Sharky's Machine. And that's another movie, Sharky's Machine. His entire crew, his machine, all great character actors: Bernie Casey, Richard Libertini. By the 90s, he was appearing frequently on TV. He was in movies like Home for the Holidays. They may actually mention Home for the Holidays, the movie that Jodie Foster directed with Holly Hunter and Robert Downey and Anne Bancroft, Steve Guttenberg. That is a great movie. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? And he passed away in 2012 at the age of 89 after a long and highly successful career. And again, he was a war hero, that guy. POW war hero. We mentioned Strother Martin already as Chong's dad in Up in Smoke. Ben Johnson, one of the great cowboy actors of all time, appeared in The Last Picture Show. He was in The Getaway. Of course, Robert Loggia. You can't go wrong with Robert Loggia. It says here, while Strother Martin was known for one particular line, Robert Loggia became known for one particular scene, in which he and star Tom Hanks played the keys of a giant piano in the 1988 movie Big. Loggia's career began in the 50s on TV. He was featured in movies like Scarface, Preetzy's Honor, playing gangsters. And then he played in a wide variety of roles and returned to TV more, Robert Loggia. And a classic orange juice commercial that...
Try some new Minute Maid orange tangerine. It's got calcium.
Then I'm not drinking it.
Oh, no, it's sweet. You'll like it.
I don't believe you.
Well, then who would you believe?
I don't know, Robert Loggia. Whoa, Robert Loggia.
Billy, your mother's right. New Minute Maid orange tangerine tastes great. It's got as much calcium as milk.
If you say so, Mr. Loggia.
Yeah.
This is great.
Enjoy your breakfast.
New Minute Maid orange tangerine with calcium.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw that commercial. It was my first wife and I, Wendy, and we were sitting on the couch and we were watching TV. And that commercial came on. And first of all, I laughed when the kid said, I don't know, Robert Loggia. I laughed at that because that's just such a random name that a kid's not going to know who Robert Loggia is. I don't know, Robert Loggia. And then Loggia walks through the door. I'm telling you, I was like, is this really happening? Is this like a real commercial? I don't know, Robert Loggia. Then Robert Loggia comes in. He was great. Robert Loggia was great. Really good in Lost Highway, the David Lynch movie. That's not a G-rated movie. Let me just explain that right now. That's an R-rated David Lynch movie. Lost Highway. James Cromwell has been mentioned. James Cromwell began in theater. He started out on television in the 70s. Yeah, he was a Stretch on All in the Family. James Cromwell was Stretch Cunningham before making his first real mark in film as the farmer raising a pig who thought he was a sheep in Babe. He is a distinctive-looking, tall, slender man who had a very dramatic part as Chief Dudley Smith in L.A. Confidential. After L.A. Confidential, it was nonstop work for Cromwell, both in films, such as the role of the Green Mile, and a variety of TV shows. He also appeared in the remake of The Longest Yard. Why do they keep bringing up the remake of The Longest Yard? And President George H.W. Bush in W. Yeah. And I saw him walking down the street one time. He was passing. He was going one direction. I was going the other direction. And I said, I pointed at him and I said, "That'll do, pig." And I was like, I took two steps away and I went, "Wow, that was really a stupid move on my part." And I'm sure Cromwell was like, "Yeah, that was really, that's the first time anybody's ever said that to me." I don't have no idea what he was doing in town. No idea. I was walking east on Illinois, going to the River East Theater, and he was going west, cross paths, right at the intersection where the Whole Foods is. That's where it happened. And like an idiot, I said, "That'll do. That'll do, pig." What the hell was that?
That was me. Sorry about that.
And here's another one that always reminds me, like saying something stupid to an actor, like it's the first time they've ever heard it. Also mentioned in this article is the great Paul Giamatti, who is one of my favorite actors on the planet and one of the best character actors in the world, who stars in one of my favorite movies ever, Sideways. And that's the movie that I've mentioned many times. The character that he plays, Miles, is the only one character of any movie I've ever seen that I mostly identify with. I was like, I so identified with Miles in Sideways when I saw it. So I love him. But he talks about how every time he goes out to, you know, they go out to dinner or they go to a bar, somebody orders him a glass of Merlot. Somebody will buy him a glass of Merlot. And he's like, "That's great. That's real original. Like, nobody's ever done that before. Like, you're the first person that decided to do that." And the other thing, the other stupid thing about getting Paul Giamatti a glass of Merlot is that in the movie, he hated Merlot. You get him a glass of Pinot. Get him a glass of Pinot. Not Merlot. The character hated it. So, anyway. All right. The moral of that story is I'm an idiot for saying that to James Cromwell. Wildcard Wednesday will be the last song of Wildcard Wednesday. And that's 708 area code requesting Blippi with Shapes. Blippi? Do we know anything about Blippi?
He seems to be an educational songwriter.
Oh. And he's just the one name, and it's Blippi.
Correct. With an I.
With an I. B-L-I-P-P-I. Blippi. And that's Shapes. Thank you, Blippi. Thank you for the lesson. We could all use a lesson about Shapes at around 5 o'clock in the morning. That's what we all need. Thank you, Blippi. I like this guy's name, Blippi. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. as we are every weekday morning. I'm the overnight dude from 1 to 5 a.m. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive, and coming up soon, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Okay, welcome back. We've been talking about great character actors. And we got a bunch of text here, and then I'll rattle off a few more of these actors that don't get the recognition that they deserve, but star in like 53 movies a week. 262 area code, Powers Booth. Oh, man, what a great actor that guy was. Great actor. And we're really good friends with Stephen Tobolowsky. Our buddy Stephen Tobolowsky has got great stories about Powers Booth. 773 area code, Margot Martindale. Yeah, she's been in everything. And gets a lot of awards, too. Margot Martindale is one of these people. I think she's won like 3 Emmys. Kurt says, "Know it, I wrote it." That's the Three Stooges. "Know it, I wrote it."
Who wrote it?
708 area code, Clint Howard. Well, you know, the thing about Clint Howard is, as long as Ron Howard continues to make movies, Clint Howard will have a part in them. Even movies that he takes over after the directors of the movies get fired. Clint Howard is in Solo. I think he's in every Ron Howard movie.
I think you're right.
815 area code says Howard McNear, terrific character actor. 847 and 8708 area code mentioned Ben Johnson, who we talked about a little bit already. 815 area code says Aldo Ray. Walleye Chris says Walter Brennan. Oh, man, legend. Walter Brennan, legend. Tony says Kurtwood Smith. You can't mention character actors and not mention Clarence Boddicker. Yeah, well, Kurtwood Smith rules. Let me just say that right now. He's the best. And my favorite, you mentioned Clarence Boddicker. His performance in RoboCop is fantastic. And he says one of the greatest, I think one of the greatest lines in film history, Dan. Do you know what? Have you seen RoboCop?
I have, but I don't know which line you're referring to.
He walks into the guy's apartment. There's a bunch of hookers there. And he walks in. He goes, bitches, leave. That's the only thing he says. Most ridiculous line of all time. Kurtwood Smith. A lot of people know Kurtwood. He's been in a ton of movies. But most people, I guess, know him from That 70s Show. Right? He plays Red on
right,
That 70s Show.
He plays the dad.
He plays the dad, yeah. Peter Indicator says, Brian George has played a variety of ethnicities and never a lead. 847 area code says, my dad was Loggia's roommate in college. What? What?
If only you had texted earlier. We need to know if he enjoyed orange juice.
Oh, my God. Your dad was Robert Loggia's roommate in college? That's fantastic. 708 area code says, what about Keith David? Yes, Keith David. From The Thing with A. Wilford Brimley. See, that's how that all started. And he's the only thing in Night School that didn't suck was Keith David. All right, let's see. We got Gary Oldman is mentioned in the article. And, yeah, I mean, I guess he's a character actor, sure. Not really a leading man type, really. William H. Macy, Chicago's Own. Steve Buscemi, basically the definition of a character actor. Lee J. Cobb, who was such a great actor, On the Waterfront, he was in 12 Angry Men, Coogan's Bluff, The Exorcist. Then, of course, we mentioned Paul Giamatti, who's been in so many great movies. And it's really weird that I'm 2 years older than Paul Giamatti. Doesn't it seem strange, Dan, that I'm 2 years older than Paul Giamatti?
It does, yes.
James Whitmore, M. Emmett Walsh was mentioned earlier, Harry Dean Stanton, Jack Warden, one of the greatest character actors of all time. Warren Oates, oh my God, Warren Oates. People remember him as Sergeant Hulka from Stripes. He's been in a ton of other stuff. Great Westerns, Tulane Blacktop, Race with the Devil. Blue Thunder, that was his last movie. Thomas Mitchell, one of the classics. Martin Balsam. Of course, you got the great George Kennedy. And then the person who is number one on the list, Ned Beatty. And I think that's a good call. Dan, you've seen Network?
I have.
He's in one scene in that movie. One scene. It's one of the greatest monologues in film history. First of all, it's incredibly well written by Paddy Chayefsky, but he's amazing in that scene. Fantastic. All right, the great Ned Beatty. All right, let's take a break. We got the news coming up. And tomorrow, Sven Gulli is going to be with us. Good old Rich Coase. News is up next.